Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. All right. So the perennial question is, how long does your keyboard last before you spill food on it or drink or something else like that? So this is the important issue I want to discuss this morning, because last night, with a mouthful of tea, I had to cough, and it was just uncontrollable. I couldn't help it. And of course, guess where the tea ended up? Well, on my keyboard. So I've lost the shift key on one side, and I've lost my brightness control. So I figured a way to set the computer on automatic. But this is, I love these little life things that we all face. That we have the important issues of the day, freedom, slavery, cataclysmic nuclear war, pestilence, famine, rampant pandemics, and keyboards that you spill food on or drink on. Let's put this all in perspective, shall we? So before we get into some of our more deep and topics, including freedom, and of course our regular Thursday reporters, that would be Dave Schneier. I'm just waiting for Dave to call in. Schneier at 6. Six, Dave, wake up. We need a wake-up call. We need like a bugle or something like that. Let's get to the important issue. Gene, how long can you keep a computer keyboard around before something spills on it? I'm good for about 6 months, I figure. And then after that, that's it. Sooner or later, I'm as careful as I could be. I really am. I got the food on one table, and I got the computer stuff on another. It doesn't matter. Something's going to happen somehow, some way. And I tried to take care of it as best I could, but, so I think I have to go out to my favorite computer store and see if I can get another reconditioned keyboard. And it does have a shift key and a brightness control. Everything else is working. I get really lucky because the whole thing was covered with tea. It was hysterical. How's your life, Gene?
Can you relate? Yes, the sad thing is only once in my life, a few months ago, doing talk radio, I had my tea on my table and I knocked it over right into my computer. And to this day, it still hasn't worked. crazy. Just one time you do it and it's like, my batting average is pretty bad. But crazy how that happened. So
if anybody has a drink-proof keyboard, let me know. But this is why I get reconditioned ones. I mean, you can put those little plastic guards over them. But, like I say, I do the best I can. I have the tea on my food's on one table to my left. I have like this kind of 90-degree angle. I got my main table where I'm sitting right now. And then to my left is one angle that 90 degrees to that, where the food goes and the other stuff and papers and all that kind of thing. I'm a two-desk operation. But it doesn't matter. You're sipping your tea and all of a sudden, it's just one of life's little hysterical things. All right, let's get Dave on. Dave Schneier with Schneier at 6, and we'll see what's going on with him this week. And this is why I love having reporters. Once a week come on, we have a different show every day, and it's eternally fascinating to me. The more voices we have, the more interesting it gets. Good morning, sir. Good morning, Dave. What's going on with you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm doing pretty good. So what's the title of the show? What's the main focus today, Greg?
Oh, he's the guy that calls in. He's a reporter and says, "What are you talking about today?" I always love when that happens. I'm sorry, Dave. I'm teasing you because I do try and promo these things. I'm getting better actually doing the show the day before. For a while when I had more extra, part-time job stuff, I was like, within sometimes 20 minutes before the show started, like, oh, damn, what am I going to talk about? And I'd plug the thing in. That's a little secret. Let's talk about this. I have the title of the show today, January 6th Political Prisoner Benefit Jailhouse Rock Concert is the title of the show today. So let me explain what's going on. In the last 24 hours, a whole bunch of stuff has happened. And actually, it was about, I think it was Tuesday. On Tuesday's show, I was talking to, I think Josie was on the line, Shelby was on the line. I'm not sure if, I don't think Paulette was yet. And we're just talking about the January 6th, the political prisoners that are being held in the D.C. gulag. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if we had a concert like Farm Aid or Live Aid or something like that? What can we call it? Legal Aid? That was one of my possibilities. Josie wanted Born Free. And so I'm thinking of this last night, and apparently there's another group, Patriot Freedom Project, which is also doing the same thing that Jonathan Mosley is trying to do. Jonathan will be on the show at 7:30, so about an hour and a half from now. Whatever time zone you're in, It's an hour, about an hour and a half from now. We just started today. And so I got a little background noise in your line, Dave. So just if you have stuff in the background.
Okay.
We hear everything. You know, if your cat's on your lap and meows, we'll hear it. So this is live radio. And that go all the way to Azerbaijan, you know, Japan, you know, New Zealand, whoever else is listening this morning, which makes it fun. Anyway, so I thought this would be a really cool idea. So I've written some folks, and I'll debate whether I want to say who exactly at this point, but there's some ideas I have for people, conservative rock stars and conservative country stars, to come together and have a benefit for the January 6th gulag prisoners. Not that it would raise it would raise a ton of money. And it'd be great for the legal defense. But the main thing is it would be a chance to get out the truth. And I had this vision of Donald Trump showing up and a few other politicians, hopefully the ones that actually really believe in freedom, not just the ones that talk about it. but it'd be interesting to see what happens. And conservatives never really do this. They don't know how to use media. They don't know how to use culture. They don't know how to use entertainment. They basically think, principle will carry them through. Well, that's a bunch of BS. You got to be out there in the fray.
Yeah.
And that's where action radio is. So what do you think of the idea? Jailhouse Rock concert. Would you go to the Jailhouse Rock? This is, of course, a takeoff on Elvis Presley's song, Jailhouse Rock. So I can't use Jailhouse Rock because that's copyrighted, okay? But I don't think Elvis ever said Jailhouse Rock concert. we can look it up. We'll find out. But anyway, so that's my current idea, is to have the Jailhouse Rock concert sometime. It'd be nice if we could do it on January 6th. That's a Thursday or maybe this Saturday. But early next year, I think if we get the right people together, they can put on this huge program. Of course, I want to play, too, because, I'm a guitar player. I have a rock band. And so if I can play with, any of those bands up there, that would just be the coolest thing in the world. So that's where we are right now. So concert. Would you watch a concert for freedom? What do you think?
I would definitely watch it. I'd probably even go to it, depending on where it is. Probably a lot of neat, good people there. And I think it's important also because, what happened with January 6th is like it was so politicized, beyond politicized. What happened was is you had some people who were probably led in by federal agents, instigated by federal agents.
Yep.
A lot of other people think so. Into the Capitol, and they walked around.
Yeah, Ray Epps.
Most of them were just walking around, some of them said some stuff they shouldn't, hang Mike Pence, whatever. Probably again instigated by feds. And then some property was destroyed. So, it's not a good thing. Like, you shouldn't have participated in January 6th. But I don't think anyone's making that argument that you should have. The government also shouldn't be instigating people to break the law. So it's kind of...
Yeah, that's called entrapment, by the way. There's a word for it.
Yeah.
In fact, that's I used to know some militia folks way back when during the Clinton administration, when the militia movement was really big, a group called the Militia of Montana, which is like the most demonized group. So I had to get in touch with them because I was writing articles. That was sort of the beginning of a whole new phase of my political life. And the one thing I learned from the various militia groups is the easiest way to find the Fed, the federal agent, is that's the person who wants to bomb things. That's the person who wants to blow things up. That's the one who wants to break the law. That's the person who wants you to make a rifle barrel 1 inch too short, or have turn a semi-auto into a fully automatic gun. They're the ones that are, and it's all entrapment. It's based on illegality, because most people, they're smart enough to resist the federal government, but they're also smart enough not to fall for this kind of stuff. And the person I mentioned earlier, Ray Epps, is well known to be one of these instigators. He was the one, even the day before, January 5th, he's running around saying, we have to go inside the Capitol. And, of course, there's a bunch of people around him. There's a clip of this, and there's one guy's going, Fed, 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 because they all knew. They all knew it was what they call an agent provocateur. In other words, they're provocatively trying to do something to make people do something illegal. And, of course, if you make somebody or if you entice somebody to do something that they wouldn't ordinarily do, there's a defense against that. Because they wouldn't ordinarily do it, but you brought them into it. And, of course, the Fed can't commit a crime themselves, so they have to encourage everybody else to go in and stay outside. So you know how that works. But, Ray Epps did that. Black Lives Matter, Antifa was involved. The Capitol Hill police were involved because they invited people in half the entrances. And others, there was a staged break-in. I'm sure that was staged. And then, of course, you had the murder of Ashley Babbitt by Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd. The Capitol Hill police. That wasn't planned, I don't think, obviously. But the thing is, he should be on trial, immediately. If you're going to put Derek Chauvin on trial for George Floyd, you have to put Michael J. Byrd on trial for Ashley Babbitt. And there was a woman, I keep forgetting her name, that was killed outside the Capitol. She was beaten to death. And there was another guy, black woman. So, you know, you can call it hate crime if you want, although I don't like that terminology, but I'll use it because the left uses it. But there's a lot of things that happen, and the whole timeline is screwed up. And I had, we had calls. If you ever go back to our January 6th show and listen, Josie and Jonathan, Josie Karski, who does our Latino report on Tuesdays, and Jonathan Mosley, who does a legal report today, they were both there at the Capitol January 6th calling in live. And so we got live reports, you know, in real time, as they say. So that's a fun show to go back to. But the timeline is screwed up because Trump started his speech an hour late. So as they were breaking in to stop Arizona from their electoral challenge, which is the whole point of the real January 6th insurrection, was stopping the challenge to the electors by Trump electors. So states like Arizona sent two sets of delegates, the governor and the secretary of state. You know, usually, you know, the hacks, the deep state hacks would send in Biden electors, you know, fraudulent ones. And then the state legislature in states like Arizona sent in Trump electors, you know, because he won. Right.
Yeah.
And of course, Mike Pence, you know, the traitor in chief, Mike Pence, took the Biden electors. And I'm sure he was a part of this. Schumer, McConnell, Pelosi, they're all part of this, of shutting down the Capitol conveniently for this insurrection that they planned, that they were going to blame on Trump supporters. And then they went to the basement and planned out how they were going to stop the count and just certify, you know, Brandon, you know, in the White House. And so it's fascinating how this all came about. But January 6th, the reason that they all screwed up was that Trump started late. So while they're breaking into the Capitol to blame Trump supporters, they're still back at the Ellipse, you know, in 45 minutes walk away listening to Trump speak. And so they goofed, you know.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a perfect crime. Anyway, so that's January 6th. Back to you, sir.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard the stuff about with the Mike Pence and him being a traitor and stuff. And I mean, I understand. And I mean, he never talked about the election being stolen and stuff. So I understand in that regard. But to say that he like betrayed Trump by not, you know, doing something to change the election results, I don't really see it like in his I understand where like he, you know, he has to certify the electoral college vote, but I don't really see it like in hit like he is like he can be like the judge of if the election is secure or not, I guess.
No, he didn't betray Trump. He betrayed the country. He betrayed the Constitution.
Okay. Well,
he was constitutionally bound to send those electors. If you have a state that sends two sets of delegates or two sets of electors to Congress, okay, that's a conflict right there. So the correct thing to do is to send it back to the states that did that, and then I think there were, I don't know, we can take a look. Gene, if you have a chance, look at the states that sent two sets, please look up the slow down, Greg, the states that sent two sets of electors to Congress for January 6th. And I know Arizona was one of them. Excuse me. So the correct reaction would have of Mike Pence would have been to send those electors back to those states and say, look, you've got, you know, the inauguration is January 20th. You know, it's January 6th. Let's give you 10 days, January 16th. You better damn well come up with one set of electors, you know, and send it. That was the proper thing to do. But he also could have done that back in December. And I think it was like December 28th. There was another one of those kind of times. And there was January 6th. And there was one before that. So he had three chances to send delegates back. Electors back to their states to get that fixed, because it's not the role of Congress. Congress just counts the electors. The electors come from the states. The states elect the president.
Okay.
So the problem is if Congress is usurping the role of the states by playing favorites, by selecting the delegates they want instead of what the state wants, that's a breach of the Constitution. It's got nothing to do with Trump. You know, I'd say the same thing if they did that for, you know, against a Democrat who won. Even if I hated that Democrat, I'd still want the process to follow the Constitution. So that's what makes Mike Pence a traitor, not because he betrayed Trump, but because he betrayed the country, the country, and the Constitution. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, okay. I see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not jumping on you. I'm not picking on you. I'm just saying. But I like to clarify these things simply because that there's so much misinformation. And this is how the left uses language to change perceptions. We spent, check out the show yesterday. We spent a long time on the perception of different language and how language is used and the different things that I use on this show, the gelding old party for the Republicans. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you don't, look up the word gelding. You know, a lot of these things. We got Pianki in the line too, but I want to let you either continue with this or you know, do another subject that you want to talk about. Pianki, I'll get right to you in just a bit.
Yeah,
does that make sense to why language and why these things are so important? Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. No, I just never heard it from that from that perspective. And you know, I've read articles and stuff from people saying like Pence, you know, betrayed Donald Trump and all that. Might not, but basically, what some other people have said, not you, but what some other people have said, is that like Pence should have right then and there given the election to Donald Trump.
Absolutely not.
Like, well, not give
absolutely
people,
not.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay,
no.
So we're in agreement. Okay.
Yeah, no. Yes. But, you know, and this is why you, this is why you and everybody else should listen to Action Radio every day. This is your source of clarity.
Yeah.
We will make things, you know, taking the, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, taking the complex and making it understandable. That's my job. Not that I'm becoming Rush Limbaugh. I'm not. Rush was Rush. I'm me. We're totally different people. But the point is that my job is to clarify stuff as much as possible. And that's why I do it. Jane, did you want to get on this?
Okay. So this one here, it's like, according to Lou Dobbs, seven states, it's Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, had chosen electors for both Trump and Biden.
Okay, let me get those states again. I want to do some research. I may even do a show on this. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, what was it? Wisconsin?
Michigan. Of course, Michigan.
So Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, that's five. Which one am I missing?
Yeah. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico.
Well, that's seven states.
Yes, seven.
Interesting. Now, and where are the audits? Let's do a little cross-reference here. They're trying to get an audit in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, they've had one in Arizona, and I don't know about New Mexico. So six of those seven states either have or want audits. Isn't that interesting? That the seven states that sent – see, those are the states where those electors should have been sent back. Is this new stuff for you? What do you think, Dave?
No, I've heard about I mean, with the state sending multiple electors, I haven't heard about that. I've heard about the audit in like Arizona and other states. I would
Action
say
radio
that at this
every
point,
day.
I would say that at this point, that I think it's. I mean, obviously, you know, justice, you know, should be brought to the legal system. But at the same time, I would honestly say that it would probably be better, politically speaking, to just gear up for 2022 and 2024.
Okay.
I mean, because, like, the likelihood of the, you know, election actually being, you know, corrected, I would say, I mean, it's just, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Okay.
And a lot of other people don't. I mean, it's just because of how deeply entrenched, like, in the judicial system, I just don't think, like, I just don't see anyone actually doing anything about it. I mean, no one is actually doing anything about it. I mean, you've had all these audits already and stuff, all these lawsuits already, you know, from all these different people.
Okay, hold on. I mean, the cannon's loaded. I'm just ready to pull the cord. But let's get Bianchi in there first, and Gene, you know, before I unload on this one. Not against you, but it's just because you brought up some really incredibly good valid points that need to be talked about. Bianchi, welcome to the show this morning. You're on with Dave Schneier and Schneier at 6.
Yeah, your volume is low.
Mine is?
This morning, Rick, yes.
Huh.
But... No, you have to, the controversy between states should have been settled in the states. That's why the court decisions, like with Texas, the court said they didn't hear it because that controversy is supposed to be settled with the states. The problem is that the people of the states don't hold their legislature accountable. And Pence should have sent the ballot back.
Mm-hmm.
That was his job to do because that controversy still exists. You know, another thing, too, Congress has the power to have separate ballots on election day, federal ballot separate from the state and local candidates' ballot. And they should set the vetting process for those who participate with the federal ballot. That's the only way that you're going to have free and transparent elections because these 50 states are never going to get in line.
Well, I don't want the 50 states in line. I don't want them agreeing with each other on everything. That's not the point. The point of the states is to be independent, you know, and be equal. That's why every state has two senators. It's got nothing to do with population. It's everything to do with equal representation.
What I mean, Greg, is that they never want to have the ballots where you don't have these problems. They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Georgia surely isn't going to do it. That's why you have to have a separate federal ballot that has separate rules and regulations on who participates and how the ballots are handled.
So the question is Congress, and Dave, you might want to take a look at our Write Your Laws website, because Pianki has his notes and all proposed laws under legislation. And so something you might want to report on next week. I mean, feel free. Make a good project for you, too. Now, Pianki, I've forgotten some of the details of the bill because I just, you know, I'm sorry. I apologize. Are you going to have Congress regulate the federal part of the ballot, or are the states still going to regulate the federal offices of the ballot?
No, the Constitution says the federal government has the power. The Congress has the power to do that themselves. Other than setting the places where the elections are held, that's up to the state. But the qualifications, procedures, and so forth dealing with the federal ballot can be set by Congress itself.
What the Congress cannot do is get rid of the electors and the Electoral College, because that's in the Constitution.
Well,
it's not in the Constitution.
Well, you got to have the election before the electors come into play, right?
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. In fact, I realize that the Electoral College is not in the Constitution, but it should be because it's we'll have to find out. We'll get some election specials. Take a look at that.
If Congress say that your identification needed in order to vote on the federal ballot has to be vetted just like a U.S. passport, you know, non-citizens can't get U.S. passports, other criteria to get a U.S. passport, but that should be the same for those who's voting on the federal ballot. There should be strict rules on absentee ballot. There should be identification system that not only matches numbers on the ballot, but also on the envelope. And then you get into who counts the ballots. That should be at least three people. And at periodical times, all three should have identical counts. If not, then we need to straighten that out right then and there.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to have election standards so that we don't have some of the problems we have now. But, of course, you know the opposition is going to be the standard will be mail-in votes, and the standard will be same-day registration, and the standard will be, you know, ballot harvesting is okay, and there's all kinds of other things. All the things that we think of as voter integrity or the Democrats think of as, you know, oppression, and all the things that we think they do that are cheating, they think of as just, you know, tactics. So we've got a problem here. We've got a big divide.
I agree with you.
Across. Yeah.
I agree with you. Let that apply to those state and local ballots. If blacks in Georgia say that their people standing in line should have access to ranch dressing, chicken wings, and ice water, then let them have it. But the thing is that when the time goes to cast that federal ballot, there needs to be a separate system.
Yeah. Well, here's what I got. Article 4, Section 4. It says the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. And because the legislature makes the rules, right? But here's the but: the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, except as to the place of choosing the senators. So the Congress can actually take over the state elections. I think that's wrong. I think they goofed when they wrote that section. I think they should.
No, they take over the federal elections.
Well, they can't take over
the federal ballot. Congress can't take over.
I am reading it. Times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives. Okay, shall be prescribed.
Senators and representatives of congressmen.
I know that, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. You know, except as to the place of choosing senators. So these are for Congress. The state legislature makes the rules, except for Congress. I mean, it makes the rules, you know, for the election of senators and representatives to Congress. That makes sense. But
Congress
the problem with this is
Congress
that Congress can change
right
that.
Congress has the right to alter the rules for electing U.S. congressmen and also U.S. senators.
No, of course not. So that's why you want to separate it. Well, I think that would, even if you had a ballot that was, Dave, feel free to jump in this argument here. I want to get Dave back in here. This is a report. But the thing is, even if you have you know, the ballots together. Hold on a second. I'm sorry, Dave. Even if you have the ballots together, both state and federal offices on the same ballot, the Congress can still only regulate the federal offices, the senators and representatives. They can't touch
the
part of the ballot that's the state. Yeah. I'm still thinking about your bill. I want it on there, but I'm not. Well, let's get Dave's opinion. Dave, what do you think?
I like the bill. I agree. I don't have any problem with Congress, regulating federal elections in that way, except for the slippery slope that it creates, giving justification to the Democrats, recent quote-unquote voter rights bill, just opening the door to more federal, whenever the Democrats get, I'm assuming this would just be a law, not a constitutional amendment, so second the Democrats get into office, they could use, the precedent, for, increased federal government and regulations to pass, whatever they want, and, say Republicans are flip-flopping on the issue of regulating federal elections and stuff like that. So that'd be the only – I support the bill, the idea of it wholeheartedly. It's just that, – that'd be the only thing that I'd be concerned about.
Okay. Jackie?
And, a funny thing, too, the 1965 Voters' Rights Bill Act, that is, didn't have anything to do with voting. It has to do with registration.
See,
blacks always had the right to vote. Black males had the right to vote in the country before white women did. What the problem was is that you had areas in certain states that put up all these challenges to those who wanted to come vote and those who wanted to register to vote. So that's
poll
what
taxes,
the 1965 voters
literacy
right
tests.
Did.
Yeah. Are you talking about poll taxes, literacy tests, things like that?
I can't hear you.
Oh, Gene, can you hear me?
No, I can hear you. Yep, you just
okay.
Made it for
all right, just to make sure. Yeah, if Pianchi, I got my gain up a little bit, but I don't want to be too loud because I don't want to start cutting.
No, it's somebody frying eggs in the background.
Oh, that's Dave. Dave's got some background noise. All right, as much as possible. Just to count.
The thing off.
Is, Gene, yeah,
the
go
thing
ahead,
is with me, with Congress, having any control over it, they're so inept and illegal. They don't do anything constitutional or what's best for the country. They do what's best for their party. And not to say that the Republicans wouldn't do the same thing, but my thinking was the last election, if we don't fix that, if you don't change what went wrong there, all other future elections, it's not going to matter.
Yes, I agree with that too, and it's a good point to bring up that there is no 2022 unless you've corrected 2020, because there's no incentive for the Democrats not to cheat again. What's to stop them? The GOP, the geldings are proudly going forth, like lemmings to the cliff, all singing the same song. We're going to be great. We're going to win in 2024. And Democrats, the Democrats are really quiet on that. You notice there's no big campaign for the Democrats. Remember, it's not the news you hear about that's important. It's the news you don't hear about. Okay, so the news we're not hearing about right now is the Democrats saying we're going to win in 2024. Well, why aren't they saying that? Well, because they know they're going to cheat. And why they know they're going to cheat? Because the Republicans aren't doing anything to stop them from cheating. So the same thing's going to happen. We're going to have a replay of 2020, which is a replay of 2018, which God knows how many times it happened before that, but not to the extent that it had in 2018. I still don't believe that the House went Democrat in 2018. Because there's too many Republicans that had their seats flipped in the wee hours of the morning of Election Day in 2018. So you know it's going to happen again unless the geldings change the system and get all kinds of voter ID laws and voter integrity laws in now. And even then, the one place that seemed to work best was Virginia. So when they have an amazing amount of poll watchers, when the geldings get their act together and behave more like stallions, they can accomplish something. But unless you have that, then with the political turmoil this year, with all the issues that are against Democrats, there isn't a single Democrat that should win an election, given what Brandon has done to destroy this country, from mandates to energy to prices to inflation to international stuff to the border to illegal aliens to everything else. There's not a single Democrat that should win office, unless they're in a bunch of radical Marxist areas, or very few Democrats. But it should be a GOP wipe of the board. But it's not going to be because the Democrats are going to cheat and the Republicans are going to let them. That's the problem. Dave? And we'll get to Jim Bianchi.
Well, you're absolutely right. If you don't point out and bring out the errors that went on in the 2020, and quote-unquote the cheating, then it's going to continue to go on and on and on because it worked once before.
Well, see, why aren't the Democrats complaining? Let me ask you, Dave, you know, wouldn't it make sense that Democrats would be campaigning right now saying we're going to win in 2024 or 2022? We're going to beat the Republicans. We've got a better program. Wouldn't it make sense for them to do that, to do some kind of campaigning?
Possibly. I would say the reason why they're not campaigning right now is because they don't know who their nominee is going to be in 2024. It could be Kamala Harris.
Then,
it could be.
Let's say 2022. Let's say 2022. Let's do the midterms. Why aren't they campaigning for the midterms at this point?
I think it's possible that, look, here's the thing. If they were planning on rigging every single race, Glenn Youngkin wouldn't have won.
Well,
you've had different special elections across.
I think they did plan on rigging that race. I think they lost. I think they were beaten. They rigged New Jersey, but the New Jersey Republican was stupid. He rejected a Trump endorsement. Idiot. Look what happened. So he didn't. He's a rhino. Mm. You know, he's a better. Yeah. He would have been better than the Marxist Democrat, but he's still a rhino. He was an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn Youngkin embraced Donald Trump, embraced America First policies. You know, America First policies are winners overwhelmingly in this country. I mean, how many people went to Trump rallies versus how many people went to Brandon? Brandon paid like 10 people to show up at his rallies. Trump had to turn away 50,000 at his rallies. You can't tell me that Brandon beat Trump. You know, just on anecdotal evidence alone, it's impossible to believe that unless you're lying. You know, but the thing is they haven't corrected it, and the Democrats are being strangely quiet right now. And where's Obama denouncing, you know, the Republican America First things? He said, we're a one world together. We're all in this together. You know, they're a bunch of racists. You know, where is he? Obama hasn't said a word. So secretly, now here's the thing, though. There was an Arizona Republican black candidate taking advantage of the black conservative popularity these days, which is kind of like really in vogue right now. It's good that it is, but it's interesting that, you know, people had a run on that. And so you had an alleged black conservative in Arizona, I forgot his name, was running. And then Project Veritas completely outed him as a liberal Democrat. You know, he was lying through his teeth. He hates Trump. He hates America First. He hates, you know, Trump supporters. And yet he was running as a conservative Republican. Well, his campaign's done. But this is what I think the new campaign is. You look at most of the new candidates who are trying to be, you know, America First Republicans, and a certain percentage of them are Democrat plants. They just are. Dave?
You know, I posted on your site an article that a white person with the Green Party contrived with black organizations that's disseminating that sort of information out amongst not a large but blacks in the city of St. Louis, where she said that whites need to pay reparations to blacks, and on and on and on and on. That's the kind of message
that's
coming out from the living.
Yeah, your content of that article was suppressed, if I remember.
No, I think it's still up there. I read it on your site.
On which one? The Action Radio group page?
Yes. You mean you couldn't read it?
No, it said that's why I made that comment. I guess they didn't like it. They suppressed it.
Well, I know what to do on that. Just give me about a half hour.
Okay, call us back. We got Cindy in line. Dave, see how fast this half hour goes? This is incredible. I really like having you on. Yeah, okay. So let's get a comment from you, and if you can stick around, great. If you have to take off, that's okay too. But what do you think so far? What have you concluded from this morning's discussion?
No, I think it was a good discussion. I mean, definitely. I like the idea about the bill with, you know, requiring federal safety standards for federal elections. You know, maybe it is something that should be done. It's kind of like a lesser of two evils. So, you know, because again, you don't want, you know, my main thing is like you don't want to give the Democrats like a justification for their own. But I guess they're already trying to do it anyway, so it probably doesn't even matter. But you know,
yeah. Well, they can't win, so they're going to cheat. The data seems pretty. So what you want to do is take a look at take a look at Pianki's bill. So you go to writeyourlaws.com, go to the legislation menu, click down to it's either citizen bill ideas or all proposed laws. I forgot where it is, but you'll see Pianki's bill and take a look at it. See what you think for next week. Sound good?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, okay. Thank you for having me on, Greg.
You're very welcome. Let's give it your show this time because I'll make sure that we get people know your YouTube channel and that kind of stuff.
It's the Schneier Show.
Spell that.
S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R.
There you go. Because we got folks that don't speak English listening all over the world. So I think our newest one, Guatemala, has joined us. Azerbaijan has joined us. France has picked up. France is now number 4 of our international audience. Most of the audience is still in the United States, but France kicked Russia out of the number 4 spot. So it's we're catching on. Freedom sells. It's just freedom's that people want freedom. It's just a question of how and when.
Sure.
All right, sir. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Thank you.
And we'll get you next
week. You too.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's switch over to medical freedom. God knows we need that. Cindy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, great time. I want to do a I'm going to talk about this more with Jonathan because his actions kind of inspired this, but I want to have a jailhouse rock concert for the January 6th folks, a big benefit, and do what the left does. You know, Live Aid, Farm Aid, now we're going to have Legal Aid.
Oh, awesome.
So that's my new idea. So I'm making some inquiries and talking to some folks and doing some behind-the-scenes stuff. I got a big press release on this. And so, you know, you're on the list. So you'll get this, too. But talk to your friends and stuff and anybody that might be interested in the jailhouse rock concert. I love this idea. I think it's so much fun. Yeah. So that's
unbelievable that they're still in jail. My husband and I were talking about that. Are they? Yeah. Have they actually been charged?
Nope.
Wow.
Because if they're charged, they could go to trial. If they could go to trial, they could get out. If they can get out, they can tell how they've been tortured and completely abused by the D.C. guards and the jail system. And the assistant warden, who's an absolute pig, who's just bragging about how, you know, she's completely mistreating him and calling him all white supremacists and all this other kind of stuff. It's really is disgusting what's going on in that jail. That jail should be closed down. And those folks should move to
in America, how is that happening? I didn't think you could be held indefinitely. What happened to a speedy trial?
Well, it's easy. When one party is Marxist and the other party is geldings, and one group does things that are illegal and the other group lets them, that's how it happens. It's really simple.
Wow.
Yeah, no. Wow. Sorry for the stark reality check, but that's pretty much it. Yeah, that's how it happens. You know, I mean, Edmund Burke was right. All that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. And the people that can do something aren't. You know, why do you think the Senate, our Senate in Congress has 50 Republicans and 48 Democrats, yet the Democrats are in the majority position and have all the committee chairs? Because the Republicans are geldings.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Senate rule that says the two senators that caucus with the Democrats or can be, you know, called Democrats, and the vice president, who's not a part of the Senate except during a tie, you know, makes the Democrats a majority. But that's a bunch of BS. Simple fact is, if you look at the members, the Republicans have the majority, and yet they didn't fight for it because they're geldings. You know, they are the party of weak. They are the party of you know, losers. So they are the party of – it doesn't matter what the Marxists do because, quite frankly, most of them go along with it. That's why we are where we are. And it's only a few court judges that are getting the vaccine mandates and things, you know, out of the way. So the courts, some of the courts, and most of those are Trump judges. This is the thing that's not really being told. Those are Trump judges that are getting rid of mask and vaccine mandates.
Mm.
Back to you, Cindy.
Well, I wanted to ask, weren't Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, weren't they fighting to do something for the prisoners in D.C. and whatnot?
Where's the bill to close down the D.C. jail? Where's the press conference every day? I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene went to the jail and you know, really disclosed a lot of really horrible things that are going on in there and also recorded the fact that they sing the Star Spangled Banner every night and pledge allegiance to the flag. These people aren't anti-American. They're anti-tyranny. And what's happening to them is what would happen in a communist state. Actually, in a lot of countries in the world, they'd already be dead, quite frankly, if you want to get, you know, but they can't, you know, I think if the Democrats could, they would. If they could intern Trump supporters, like Japanese Americans were interned in World War II, done by a Democrat, by the way, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, they would. Yeah. You know, you look at the mandates, all these things that Democrats would do to us, regardless of freedom in the Constitution or anything, just because they can. Something we talked about Tuesday, which is a funny story. Gene's, you know, remembers our little chat with, anyway, I'm not going to go into that. But it's because they can, and they're not being stopped. You know, unless you stop evil, evil wins, okay? It has to be a positive action. So give me some
but
good news. No, go ahead.
I haven't followed it closely, but I was hearing that, you know, there was some attention being brought to it and by some
Action
big...
Radio every day. Cindy, this is your charge. Action Radio every day. In fact, you know, I'm gonna write that down. I'm gonna make one of my I have my little things here that let me play you one here real quick. They only take a few seconds. I make things like this. Action Radio, dangerously cool. So now I'm gonna make another one. Action Radio. Every day.
You know, Greg?
Yes, sir.
You talk about the Japanese Americans. Uh-huh. Now, they were not afforded due process during their internment. Now, I can understand why the internment went on, but that's why they was compensated for the losses that they incurred because they were not afforded due process.
No,
but
I can't,
the same thing is happening. These people in D.C., they are not being afforded due process. And that goes back to the point that Democrats want to have the off-and-on switch on the U.S. Constitution. They turn it off when it's to their convenience and turn it on when it's to their convenience.
Oh, absolutely. And especially Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher, who said that the public interest supersedes constitutional rights. I mean, he should be tossed out of his job just for saying that. If that's his understanding, if that's his orientation, if he thinks that that's actually the policy of this country, he has no business being in government at all. He has no business being dog catcher. Nothing against dog catchers.
Well, where are
the
attorneys
a little more honorable than him.
Which
attorneys?
The January 6th attorneys.
Well, Jonathan's going to be on in an hour. Jonathan's coming on at 7:30. He is one of the January 6th attorneys. That's why he's made the call. That's why we sent the press conference press release out to call for other attorneys. In fact, I'm going to call. Go ahead, Jean.
I was going to say the sad thing is some of the attorneys are Democrats. They don't want to get these people out of, and I don't want to say Democrats. They don't want to get these people out of jail. So they're not really doing much to help them.
No, this is going to be patriotic attorneys. This is going to be conservative attorneys that are going to get these folks out. But here's the thing, too. The ACLU should be all over this because if a Democrat can do this, a Republican can do it. What if Republicans started locking up Democrats who protested Trump? And they said, well, look, we got precedent. Democrats did it. You know, they locked up Trump supporters, so we can do it, too. I mean, what if that happens? You think? And I know the ACLU will get in on that, but they'll be able to say, well, look, you didn't object when Trump supporters were being locked up. Why are you objecting now? And they'll have a point. Cindy?
I just don't understand how this is even a problem. I don't understand it.
Okay. You've got to deny your denial.
Some people hatred for one person.
Yeah.
Well,
all right,
look
all
at
you
the
folks rioters. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Look at the rioters and looters that went on, 564 cities, cases, incidents. They should be still in jail also. But they go in and get a tap on the wrist and they let go. They go to another city and repeat it all over again.
No, but they fill an objective, though. I mean, they serve a purpose. You know, just like the KKK served a purpose to intimidate white Republicans and black Americans from voting in the South when the Democrats were in charge of everything. The looters today, the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa, you know, the gangs that are looting all these stores, they serve a purpose. Their purpose is to create fear, to drive people to government for safety, to take away, so the government can take away freedom and impose more control. I mean, that's how this works. This works in every country in the world. I'm sorry to be so starkly blunt and realistic, but that's what's going on. So as I was saying to Cindy earlier, you've got to deny your denial. You have to get over the fact that I can't believe this is happening here. Because it's happening here, so believe it. You know, I'm not. You know,
yeah, but
I'm not yelling
like
at you, but okay, go ahead. Yeah.
With the rioters and looters, I get it. Mm-hmm. The inaction resulted in nobody being held accountable. But when
right.
you've got, if you've got attorneys that are taking action, there are safety measures in place, like our Constitution, that if an
mm-hmm.
attorney was pursuing this, I don't understand why they're still in jail.
Because nobody's done anything to let them out. They're not forcing the trials. They're not forcing the arraignments. You know, they're
Isn't
not
that
to
where
see.
Your attorneys come in?
Well, yeah, but the attorneys are trying, but there's a process, and it takes a while. You should actually stick around. If you can, call Jonathan, or I can ask him the same question, what's taking so long. I know from what he's talked about in the previous show, last Thursday is a great example. We spent about an hour and a half on this exact question. But the thing is, the lawyers can only move so fast. The judges have to set the court dates. The judges have to have the arraignments. The D.C. judges are leftists. The D.C. guards are leftists. Congress is in the hands of leftists. You know, so you've got a leftist
them,
cabal.
Put that information out there that we've been trying to schedule.
We do it every day.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing it.
Well, then you share our show. I mean, sorry to be so
well,
blunt again, but this is what we talk about all the time. Anyway, go ahead, Jackie. I'm not mad at you.
Here's
just,
the difference.
You know, yeah.
Illegals come to this country.
Mm-hmm.
They enter the country, and they seek asylum or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They get a court date, and they're let out of jail. They get a court date that may extend 1, 2, maybe 3 years into the future, and they're allowed to roam around, have babies, which are then American citizens, the way people look at the law.
Not by the
There's
Constitution.
There's a great difference in what you're seeing here. These illegals get out and are able to run around. But
mm-hmm.
these people from January 6th, they're locked up with no protection whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a new program, Pianchi. It's called Go Get Your ID. So for all the illegals that dump their IDs at the border, we're going to make them go get them. You know, and they have to go back to their country. So this is my new idea, okay? So I'm going to release it now onto the public. But my latest idea last night at, like, you know, midnight was that this is the go get your ID. So in other words, when and then you can go through all the ITIN numbers. So this is when we get a decent conservative or a real patriot. I wouldn't say conservative, but a patriotic administration. And it would be Trump on steroids, you know, with me as, like, chief advisor. And so this is the idea, is the go get your ID thing. So all the illegal aliens, when they come up for a court hearing, if they don't show up, of course, they should be immediately arrested and deported. But the other thing is everybody with an ITIN number, which is the way the illegals have been coerced into paying taxes to sort of, you know, pay their way to stay here. You go back through all those and then you have them, anybody that has a gap in their life, you know, like all of a sudden they show up in the books, you know, at the age of 28. It's like, where'd you come from? You know, or 16 or whatever. It's like, what happened the previous years? Chances are they came here illegally. So you say, okay, go get your ID. I mean, Josie has proven that everybody in Central and South America has an ID. They can't go anywhere without an ID. They can't vote without an ID. They can't do anything. So all these folks have IDs, but they're throwing them away before they get to the U.S. border. So I want to reverse that policy and say, okay, if you're undocumented, go get documented. Go get your ID. So go home. Go to your home country, get your ID, and then come back and knock on our door, and we'll see if we want you.
And then, you know, another thing that's peculiar.
Wait, what do you think? No, hold on a second. I want to.
That's a good idea.
Can you imagine if we were, if we
when
can, can you imagine
board,
if we started,
ID, keep them out.
Right. We're not rounding people up. We're not just, you know, destroying their lives. We're not, you know, they come here for a better life. Great. Well, go get your ID. We want to see who you are. Okay. So go back to your home country, get your ID, and then come knock on our door and apply, and then we'll talk. And anybody that's
well,
here that doesn't have an ID, anybody that doesn't have an ID for a gap, you know, all of a sudden they showed up here and the records start at the age of, like, you know, 16, 18, 22, whatever age, you know, 38, whatever age they start here, obviously there's a good chance they're here illegally or started here illegally.
Yeah, the assets should be seized.
Well, funny you should say that. That's in our program too. Yeah. Civil asset forfeiture of all illegal aliens. Well, then, the thing is now, if they want to go home and get their ID, I don't know if I'd seize their stuff yet. Although, if they don't go home, then I'd seize their stuff. Cindy,
the
I know
assets,
we're off the track of medical stuff, but yeah, go
the
ahead.
The assets the drug dealers are seized because
exactly.
they obtain them through an illegal activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So to get to Cindy's point of why she's not hearing about this, the simple fact is Action Radio is being suppressed. We're being suppressed by big tech. We're being shadow banned, restricted. I've got more restrictions than you can think of. And they have ever since I broadcast that the pandemic was a hoax, the chloroquine kills COVID, and all this stuff is for nothing. All these things are spreading the disease. They're not stopping it. And that was back starting in February when I had Bill Gertz on from the Washington Times saying that all this stuff came from the Wuhan lab. You know, we were on the cutting edge with a few other news organizations as to what was really going on. And ever since then, you know, we're suppressed here. Now, we're going to break out of it. It's only a matter of time. I think the Jailhouse Rock concert might be that could be the thing that breaks us out. But the simple fact is, if people would share this show in mass numbers, the truth that we talk about here every day would get out there, and we would be the counter to the narrative that you're hearing. Jean.
The January 6th thing isn't being talked about every day. We don't talk about it every day on this show. And this should be one of the forefront things on every news show until those guys are out of prison.
Well,
it should be.
If it happens to them, it can happen to any single one of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
we talk about every Thursday.
Being held in prison. But that's one day out of seven.
Well,
it's nothing.
You know, we got a lot of things to talk about here.
But the thing is, it's like we can do better too.
Okay.
Well, and,
but the bottom
and people
line
like
is,
Matt Gaetz and Marjorie
Hold on. I want Jean to finish her point because it's a good point, but I want to give you a chance to really expand.
But the thing
expand.
Is, if we just do it once a week, it's not going to get the momentum either. But the thing is, those people there, they're being abused. They're not getting the food they should be getting. Some of them have medical issues. They're not getting the food. Those that are unvaccinated are not allowed to get their hair cut, shaved, nothing. It's insane how they're being treated. They're living in mold-infested areas that when those guys came there, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt, or no, who was it, the Louis or whoever it was, the prison only allowed them to go to certain areas, and they did it at a certain time so they could clean stuff up first. That's appalling.
No, the solution is to have the geldings get some balls and do something. And I mean, you know, both the men and the women. I mean that figuratively speaking. But they have to stand up and make these folks accountable. They have to get the judges moving, and what they really should do is close down the D.C. jail. Just defund it, close that sucker down, move those people to a decent federal penitentiary someplace, you know, where they can get good legal representation. They have to get out of D.C., and then let's get them a speedy trial and let's get this over with, because they're going to find out with the trial that they're going to be all innocent, you know, of the charges. Well, maybe trespassing. But hold on, Pianki, wait a minute. I want to get Cindy out. This really is her report. So hold on. We're going to do this whole thing at 7:30. So we're going to cover this in great detail in a bit. Cindy, we got medical things to talk about. What's going on with the court cases, the vaccine requirements, and the fact that the Supreme Court said in New York that medical exemptions were okay, but religious ones weren't. And what the hell's happening out there? That's what I want to know about this time. Cindy?
That's news to me. I have not. I think I've been on hiatus the last week with this computer stuff. It seems like I've been under a rock because I haven't heard much. It seems like a lot of the conversations are camped down. I chalked it up as it's Christmas time. People are, preparing for the holiday and spending time with their family. It really, on my end, seems to be quiet, not much going on, and people are just kind of going with the flow until after the holidays. I know regular session starts in January, and there's been conversations about what's going to be needed to push the SB 1184, which is the Healthcare Freedom Protection Act. But really, not a whole lot going on. It's kind of discouraging that, I pay particular attention to what's going on in Florida. And to me, it just seems like once Ascension reversed their stance on firing you if you don't get vaccinated, and calling some of their employees back, that people just kind of accepted, okay, this is better than nothing. And
We won.
But we didn't
employees
win.
Won. Hold on a second. This is a really good point, though, because when you win, you got to take credit and you got to say, okay, here's this is good news. So, you know, you don't want to always be broadcasting bad news. The fact that Ascension has stopped their mandate and that people are being hired back, that's incredibly good news. That should be
But you know what?
Yeah.
It's not, because they're still being treated differently. We have doctors that were called back that had directorship positions before
right.
they were let go, and they came back to those positions were no longer available to them. So, yeah, while they've allowed them to come back and work, they're discriminating against them, and they've shown their true colors. They don't care about their employees, and we're now accepting discrimination, medical discrimination, as a new form of employment that's okay.
Yeah,
how
see,
is that
a
win?
This is a huge topic. Well, it's a win that they don't, that the mandate is not being, you know, exercised, that people aren't being fired, you know, for just for the simple fact that they don't want to be injected with a GMO shot, you know, and
no,
so that's
but they're
a huge
be
victory.
Treated differently. They're going to be penalized.
Well, that's another battle.
They're going to be demoted.
Yeah. No, medical discrimination is something that I really want to work with you on and talk about, because, you know, just as we have this bill that doctors can speak freely, SB was 1184. That's what you're
yeah.
talking about, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And we have two bills also, one for the Parental Bill of Rights and one for the public health, to put them directly under the Constitution in a very visible way, you know, in those two laws that I wrote for the special session. Those are things that should go to your group and go to the, you know, Pensacola Doctors for Freedom, all these other things. That's, you know, mm-hmm. this is where the, you know, these are the things that'll solve the future problems. The medical discrimination is huge. You know, I've got another story here about how welfare folks are going to be coerced into, you know, getting a shot, or they're going to be, you know, denied their benefits. You know, you've got all kinds of things happening all over the country. But discrimination, medical discrimination, the splitting of people into two groups, you know, the segregation, you know, based
yeah.
on your personal choice, is a huge problem. That's the next battle. That's next year's battle. So you're absolutely right that people are going to kind of, you know, calm down for the holidays, you know, get stuff to Christmas, get some presents, have a lot of food, have a great time. And then we pick up, you know, put the boots back on and go to war, you know, next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
And it goes beyond employment.
Mm-hmm.
In Louisiana, we have a friend in the group that went to Louisiana for vacation,
mm-hmm.
and they were not vaxxed. They were with friends that were vaxxed, and they weren't able to go to any of the nicer restaurants because they weren't vaccinated. And
mm-hmm.
even the restaurants that didn't require vaccination for takeout, you had to be in two separate lines. So even
yeah, that's
for
segregation.
Takeout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
so what's the difference between white people in this line and black people in this line and GMO injured in this line and DNA pure in that line? There's no difference.
No difference. But society as a whole has seemed to
mm-hmm.
kind of put their head down and say, okay, well,
yeah.
this is better than nothing.
No, sure isn't. No, but this, and Lexi Gina, I want to get to you because I want to give you a chance to talk on this. But the difference is that skin color you're born with, and whether to take a vaccine is a choice, but the penalty is the same: segregation. Okay, so we're
yeah.
becoming a segregated awesome. Society. We're becoming a demonized society. That's like saying people in Germany, Nazi Germany, chose to be Jewish, therefore, you know, they can be victimized, you know, or they're the root of all evil, and the Jews are spreading disease, and the Jews are doing. I mean, what the Nazis said was horrible, you know. But what's the difference today? Well, we have a pandemic of the unvaccinated. They're killing people. Well, actually, we're the ones who are not. We're the ones who are not spreading
yeah.
the disease. You look at all the evidence right now, the Omicron, the mild Omicron variant is being spread by the vaccinated, okay? The Delta variant came about because of the vaccinated. It's not the people who are DNA pure that are creating the stuff. We're already immune. We've already been exposed, built up our immunity, and whether people got COVID. See, here's the thing, too. People built up an immunity whether they got it or not. You know, just being exposed to it causes
yeah.
you to build up immunity, and that needs to be talked about. Let me hold up just for a second. I want to get Gina in the conversation, but I really want to focus on medical things, at least until the top of the hour. Well, it's only a couple of minutes. But can you stay longer? Because then we can get back into the political
yeah.
the next
half
hour.
Yeah.
Okay, let's
yeah,
do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Let's stay medical for a little bit, and then I want to and then we can branch out. Of course, Jonathan, it's going to be crazy when he gets here. Gene, I know you had some points to make, so let me give you a chance to go through those.
I just had a question. And what happened in New York the other day with the court case where they – they threw out now the medical workers still have to get vaccinated?
Well, let me refer to my Human Events article. Supreme Court rejects religious challenge to New York vaccine mandate. Human Events staff, December 13th of this year. The Supreme Court on Monday rejected a religious challenge to the New York vaccine mandate that requires healthcare workers to get the COVID-19 vaccine without exemptions. The vaccine mandate for healthcare workers went into effect in August and allows only for medical exemptions, not religious ones. Per Fox News, the Supreme Court rejected two challenges from doctors and nurses in the state for injunctive relief. An injunction stops the policy or the whatever's going on. Injunctive relief to allow religious exemptions while litigation continues in the lower courts. Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, who is my new hero of the new Trump three, dissented. So the two justices, you know, frat boy Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Island Barrett, you know, they turn out to be hopeless. I knew there's something wrong with Barrett the minute she said that Marbury versus Madison is settled law and the Supreme Court has the power of judicial review. Anybody that says that has no right to be on the court. Now, of course, they all believe that, which means almost none of them have the right to be on the court. But the only redeeming two used to be Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. And Neil Gorsuch is actually proving to be, you know, a pretty stand-up constitutionalist. So he's gone up in my book. But it's not a conservative majority 6-3. It's actually a liberal majority 6-3 because you got Roberts, the Chief Justice. You've got frat boy Kavanaugh and, Coney Island Barrett. I have some fun with those names. Plus the leftist. What's her name? Kagan. I'll think of his name. I have a little, name thing here. You know who I'm talking about. So you got the leftist.
Yeah,
Sotomayor.
Sotomayor.
Yeah,
who's the guy? What's his name?
Oh.
You know the guy I'm talking about. Breyer. Justice Breyer. Think of ice cream. Yeah. So we got Coney Allen and Breyer's ice cream.
So
yeah, go ahead.
So that means you can't do a religious exemption, right?
In the state of New York, the Supreme Court has said that the First Amendment, free exercise of religion, does not apply. That's what they really said. Let's put it in stark
terms. Just doing hypothetical, because some people, like I know people that have true medical reasons why they can't, why they don't, their doctors don't agree with them getting it. But my question is, someone like me that's relatively healthy, you know, I don't have those same issues. And so could someone say a medical issue could be a psychological issue? I mean, if you get it may cause psychological hardship or something like that? Because technically, it's like if you really believe you do not want it, it's not in your highest, best interest. Wouldn't that cause some psychological stuff to go on?
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what you could use as a medical exemption.
Sure. If you're forced by the state to take something against your will and that causes a traumatic experience in you, of course you can say that. But that's not the point. The point is there shouldn't be a vaccine mandate. This is where the court failed. Okay, the court failed because you can't mandate it. It's a seizure of your body under the Fourth Amendment, which is illegal. Okay, this is against the First Amendment, the free exercise of religion. Okay, see, people forget that this whole idea. People still have in their brain this. Well, let me ask Cindy about this. Is there a separation of church and state?
Yeah.
Why? I'm doing this as an example. This is a teaching moment. I'm not picking on you. I want you to understand that you're giving me exactly the reaction I expected. Okay? Everybody believes there's a separation of church and state. Why? I don't know. It's certainly not in the Constitution. It never has been. The whole point of the Constitution is to stop the government from imposing a religion on people. There can't be a Church of the USA with Lord Biden, as Archbishop of America. Okay? You can't have that. Short of that, there's no reason why church and state, the church is supposed to be a moral force over the state. That's the whole point of the church. One of them. It's not just, bringing God into your life and a place to worship. The church is a moral force. You know, government could only a free government could only function if it's virtuous. That was decided back in our founding. All right. So part of virtue is religion. part of a virtuous government is a belief that the government does not grant rights. That rights come from God. That you're born with them, and it's the government's job not to violate them or make them a privilege, but to protect them. So the idea that the Supreme Court comes along with their judicial review, which is an illegal usurpation of power outside the Constitution, and says that medical exemptions are okay, but religious exemptions aren't. That's a wrong decision. That's a violation of the Constitution. That's a violation of the basic principles of your birthright. But there is no separation. In fact, I did a show on this a couple of years ago, but I'll do it again. Everybody refers to the letter that Jefferson wrote to the Baptists, but no one refers to the letter that the Baptists first wrote to Jefferson. Okay, and I'll explain. I'm going to do a founding moments probably on that, today sometime. But the separation is only in terms of separating the government from making a religion. That's it. It's the only thing that it can't be done. But the idea that religion and government are incompatible, is ridiculous. Government can fund religious schools just like they fund secular schools. Jean, go ahead.
Okay, so you can say that, but look what happened in New York. So now what do they do next? Can they challenge it some more, or is it a done deal? And if it's a done deal.
You can always challenge it. No, Supreme Court decisions are only
good
until
the Supreme
Court
decision. Supreme Court.
Yeah. Is that New York Supreme Court?
Yeah, I thought that was the Supreme Court that decided that.
The New York Supreme Court decided, then it went to the federal court. Let me finish the article. This will probably make some sense. So the Supreme Court on Monday rejected a religious challenge. We talked about that. Vaccine mandate for healthcare workers went into effect in August. I talked about that. All right, so here we go. Gorsuch argued that the mandate turns away the doctors and nurses the state has depended on throughout the entirety of the pandemic. Okay, that's a nice argument, but it's not the strongest one. Okay, he said, this is Gorsuch. He dissented. He thought that religious exemptions are just as good as the medical ones, which is what he should have said. But he didn't give a strong enough reason. He says, we do all this, even though the state's executive decree clearly interferes with the free exercise of religion and does so seemingly based on nothing more than fear and anger at those who harbor unpopular religious beliefs. So that's actually a really good quote. Let me look at that quote again, because it's really good. But the economic argument that doctors and nurses have been fighting this since the beginning is not as strong as this one. He said here, we do all this even though the state's executive decree, clearly interferes with the free exercise of religion. That's the second part of the First Amendment religion clause. And does so seemingly based on nothing more than fear and anger at those who harbor unpopular religious beliefs. So in other words, the state of New York is persecuting people that don't want a vaccine. What they're really saying is that their religious beliefs aren't real. Okay, and they're not in a position to judge that.
A decree is nothing more than an agreement between two people.
That's an agreement or a contract. A decree is something that a leader does over the people. If you decree something, that's an order.
Take it back. I mean a consent decree.
Oh, well, that's different. The word consent is in it. This isn't a consent decree. Nobody consented to this. They just did it. Okay, this is an illegal order. Mandates are illegal orders. If you have to mandate something, chances are it's illegal because we're in a free country. You can't do that.
Muhammad Ali was allowed to use the religious exemption. He abused religious exemption when he went in the military, but that wasn't what really got him off.
Well, what did?
It was a procedure that didn't go right that got him off.
Oh, you mean the technicality? What we call,
technicality,
the law? Yeah. Whenever someone doesn't agree with something, it's a technicality. When someone uses it properly, it's called the law. All right. So let me continue the quote. He says, we allow the state to insist on the dismissal of thousands of medical workers. This is Gorsuch. The very same individuals New York has depended on and praised for their service on the pandemic's front lines over the last 21 months. Okay. To add insult to injury, we allow the state to deny these individuals unemployment benefits, too. One can only hope today's ruling will not be the final chapter in this grim story. So in other words, Gorsuch is absolutely right. And here's the thing, too. Somewhere along the line, religious beliefs became termed sincere religious beliefs. Remember we talked about that a couple weeks ago, Cindy? I pointed this out that, it's not enough to have a religious belief. You have to have a sincere religious belief. And who determines your security?
And who's judging that?
Well, your employer is. That was the fault I had with the Florida laws, okay? That's why I wrote a whole constitutional, you know, strong arm around the Public Health Administration of Florida. So you go back to my bills. These two bills should be on the forefront of your page every day, I hope. You know, the one on parental rights, making them constitutional and not making them subject to law, because rights subject to law are privileges. They're not rights. And the second one is putting the Public Health Administration of Florida, and every state it should be, under the Constitution. They are subordinate. So when Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher, gets up and says he can act in the public interest because he's God and he can tell you what your privileges are, you know, that your individual rights don't count, you know, he's a fascist. You know, he's a communist. He needs to go. That is untrue. Rights are supreme to laws. That's what makes them rights. That's why I wrote those two bills. Boy, I'm on a roll today. Gene, what do you think? What's that, like my vitamins? You know what it is? I won't tell you what happened 2 days ago. Well, we've already gone over it, but I think it's had a profound effect on me. Hopefully. Anyway, yeah. How can I back out of this gracefully? I don't think I can. Anyway, but that's the situation in New York. All right, let me be honest. I had the colonoscopy check a couple of days ago. Had my entire system, you know, you got to do the Drano thing ahead of time. I feel really good right now. I don't know why, but I think it's like, you know, purged me of something. Because I'm feeling pretty spunky today. So, yeah, it is. Yeah, so I'm healthy. You know, and just to make another announcement too: colon cancer, number two cancer in the country, and one of the most preventable. So get checked. Get checked. Okay, it's a pain in the butt, literally. Get checked. Okay. Probably shouldn't say that, but anyway. But for some reason, I feel particularly energetic today. Maybe it's because I got my whole insides, you know, drained out. I don't know why that's important. I don't want to bring this up, but it's a medical show, so I guess I can talk about it right now.
Yeah.
We were talking about
colon irrigation last night.
Oh, really?
It is a thing, yeah.
What's colon irrigation? I mean, I think of irrigation as watering plants.
It's basically, irrigating your colon.
Why would you do that?
Cleaning out. Well, because there are a lot of toxins,
that an enema?
Obviously.
Is
yeah, pretty
enema?
Much.
Now we're calling it irrigation?
Yeah.
Is that the new euphemism? Okay, fine.
It's a fancy term for, enema.
I guess you can't say butt wash. That wouldn't be like appropriate, would it?
You can, but I don't know how many people are going to run to get it.
Sign up for your butt wash. Yes, the latest butt wash product. Well, if they can advertise douche on TV, they can advertise butt wash. So what the hell? You know, where can we go?
Boy, right, there's one I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, I know. They don't do that. Well, maybe they don't do that anymore. I haven't seen that either, but I just thought of it. And I thought to myself, because here I'm a teenager watching these ads going, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
But butt wash. So who's the first going to come up with a butt wash product? Yeah, it's the latest in health technology.
Well, and it is a thing. I mean, we were talking about fecal transplants. You know, it's a procedure, a medical procedure that is used in Crohn's, and they've had successful results treating it. And we were talking about it because somebody had a patient, a doctor had a patient who they wanted to, it's actually the doctor in Texas that wants to give their patient on a ventilator medication that, you know, the hospital won't allow her to do. And she hasn't come out and said that, but you can read between the lines.
Well, there's a case just recently. We talked about it yesterday, I think, that I've forgotten where it was, that it was in New York or Pennsylvania. Well, no, it was Virginia. It was Virginia, the Fouquet Health Clinic, whatever it was, where the family, in fact, the son worked in the hospital, and the mother was, they had her on a ventilator, and the family doctor prescribed ivermectin. They wouldn't do it. So they got a judge to order the hospital to do it, and they still wouldn't do it. And the judge said, okay, we're going to give you $10,000 a fine per day, retroactive back a week. So they're looking at $50,000 to $70,000 in fines, and they gave the woman ivermectin 15 minutes before the mandate would have initiated the fines. So this is all about money. We know it's about money. But you have a situation where death is more profitable than life right now. These hospitals are making more money killing people than they are saving them. That's something that has to be reversed. Okay. Now these are things we need to talk about. But here's something too. If you want to add to your report, any new medical procedure, any new medical anything, because you're talking to folks that know this stuff, okay? Although butt wash is the funniest thing I've heard in a long time. That was hysterical. But,
nobody's calling it that but you.
I made up the term. I do that a lot, okay? But I can just think our new listeners in France are like, what the hell are they talking about in America? Butt wash? The French are going to come up with a new device. I think we you know, in fact, the bidet is going to suddenly get popular.
Yeah,
again, okay?
Yeah.
Okay?
They call it a bidet.
Exactly. So I can just see, you know, like those pitch guys. And now the latest in French technology, the butt wash bidet. Yes, for your enjoyment. Oh God, I'm on the bad, crazy mood today. All right. Seriously.
Well, to finish my point about the fecal transplant, we were talking about the fact that this doctor wanting to give her patient, you know, something other than the hospital protocol, including ventilation and remdesivir, she wants to do something different. And somebody was putting her on the spot about what she was wanting to give the patient. Mm-hmm. And you could tell it was for nefarious reasons. And we brought up the conversation that, okay, why is a doctor having to go into the public square and say, this is what I want to treat my patient with? Just mm-hmm. like you wouldn't want your doctor going into the public square and saying, I'm doing a fecal transplant for my patient that has Crohn's. Do you all approve? We shouldn't be doing that for COVID.
Yeah.
That's between the doctor and the patient. And if the patient has entrusted their care with that doctor, it's mm-hmm. none of my business.
Well, here's the thing,
too.
This is the same argument that the left uses for abortion. They're saying, well, it's between a woman and her doctor, even though there's
mm-hmm.
a father and a baby involved. You know, and so in the same with the pro-abortion folks wouldn't want, you know, the mandates and the religious exemptions to be denied and all the things that go along with that. And it's a separate issue in a lot of areas, but using the idea of it's a decision between a doctor and a patient, in the same way a vaccination is a decision between the doctor and patient.
And
truly
the decision is limited
rests with the patient.
To those
yeah.
people
yeah.
because you can get and give COVID being vaccinated. So
sure
there
can.
Is no difference. You're not hurting anybody but yourself mm-hmm. between you and your doctor making the decision on a medical treatment that isn't for someone else.
What the hell is a fecal transplant? You know, you're absolutely right. What's a fecal transplant? That sounds horrible.
It's exactly that. It is.
You're taking you're transplanting
fecal
poop?
Matter, yeah, and implanting it into.
And why are we doing this?
There are medical benefits in having to do with Crohn's, and I'll have to do my research to talk intelligently about it.
Wouldn't a suppository do
it,
just as well? I mean, there's got to be an alternative. You thought butt wash was disgusting? This is really disgusting. Sorry.
I'm not a doctor, but in all honesty.
Did you play one on the radio? Okay.
And I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn.
Okay.
My daughter's geneticist was talking about it, you know, years ago as, you know, treatments that they've discovered, not any recommendations for us, which, you know,
right.
it's nobody's business if it was, but we were talking about, you know, alternative medical treatments that, you know, in the public eye, people would, their natural reaction would be, oh my God, that's, you know, crazy. Why would you do that? But they are doing it and they are seeing positive results. And, you know, there are people in medical situations where that would be a welcomed treatment. They are afflicted so greatly by, you know, Crohn's or irritable bowel.
Is it the bacteria?
You know,
is it the good bacteria they're trying to introduce?
The good bacteria.
Okay, so now it makes sense. So if you're going to say, you know, if you present this, there's got to be a benefit in why they're doing that. And why can't they, so are they just taking the bacteria or are they doing the, you know, I mean, this is getting really disgusting here, but are they just harvesting the bacteria itself and planting that so
you know,
that colons have good bacteria?
I haven't looked into it beyond, it was just a conversation, you know, it's not anything we've, you know, experienced, or it was just a conversation that a very intelligent doctor had with us years ago when we were talking about, you know, new treatments that aren't mainstream or that sound crazy and really are beneficial. And it came to mind last night when this doctor was having to announce, you know, what she wants to treat her patient with to the public square.
I'd pick a new name for it. I'd call it bacteria transplant, a good bacteria transplant, something else. Yeah. Well, let's get Gene in the conversation. Fiacchi's left us for a little bit. Let's get Gene back in here. And we're going to have to take a break in a little bit. I'm going to play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. We've got Jonathan joining us at 7:30. Cindy, depending on your schedule, you're welcome to stay, of course, or catch the podcast, because we're going to get heavily into January 6th again. My apologies to Gene and Bianchi. I just really want to cover medical things when I have, you know, I try to cover the things with the reporters that we have, just for consistency and fairness. Gene, you want to get in on this here?
No, I don't have anything to add with what you guys were just talking about.
Okay, so butt wash is washed up. Let's go on to something else. But I just like saying it, okay? I'm in a really crazy mood today. But the thing is, if you have new medical treatments, this is a good place to talk about them. Any of the cutting edge stuff that's coming out there, because we used to have a pretty free society in terms of discussing things and options, you know, all those people, like I do chiropractic stuff, and years and years, way years ago, people were like, well, you can't do that. That's dangerous. Well, yeah, I'm walking because of it. I don't have back surgery, so it's not dangerous to me. You know, so there's a lot. So I'm a firm believer in, I wouldn't even call them alternative treatments. I just call them treatments, you know?
They're personal treatments. There are decisions that you make based on your medical knowledge, your current condition, the successes you've had and the failures you've had in certain medical arenas. We need to go back to personalized medicine and HIPAA. It's nobody's business what medical decisions I'm making for me that have no impact on you. And the argument of, well, we're in a pandemic and COVID, the argument is dead when you're getting and giving COVID being vaccinated. So truly, the decisions that I make for me have no bearing on you about COVID.
Yeah. See, the real argument is about segregating society. The real argument is about control by fascists that will do anything for control. You look at all the states that were under the most control, California, Michigan, New York, they're all leftist states, okay? And you look at and they have far worse results. You look at the free states, Texas, Florida, you know, some of the North Dakota, some of the other places that had, you know, very low COVID rates. Freedom kills COVID, okay? People don't realize it, but freedom kills COVID. Because the ability to get something, get over it, you know, and make your own choices, those are in your best interests.
And while I know you'll disagree, but I think it was a winning argument when people thought, oh my gosh, we're going to kill everybody if we don't stay locked down in our house. Mm-hmm. So you're willing to win over people like me that say, okay, for the greater good, this is what we need to do. But
okay,
it's a losing
right
argument now.
Stop
I know.
Stop right there. What is the greater good?
Not.
Yeah. Okay, now I was one who called DeSantis a dictator. You know, when he first came out and said close to the beaches, you know, in fact, I made a video March 20th, 5 days after the 15 days to slow the spread, saying this is a bunch of hooey. This is all nonsense. They can't do this. This violates the Constitution. You don't close the beaches. You open the beaches. You get people out in the fresh air, get the sunshine. And I was doing this before, most anybody else was. You know, go ahead.
And I know that... it's not right, but I think we were willing to accept it, or there is a large segment of society that was willing to accept it when you're faced with something that you feel is going to wipe out humanity. It's not the right answer, but it's acceptable to a lot of people. But that argument is gone when you're still getting and giving COVID with the very treatments that they put out to stop it, aren't stopping it. Really, it goes back to we should have the freedom because we're not in a pandemic that's killing society.
No, wait a minute. Even if you are a pandemic that's killing society, you still have your freedoms. I don't care how severe the nuclear war, the pandemic, whatever the emergency the government creates or actually exists, you always have your constitutional rights. You always have to have your constitutional rights. As Bianchi says, there is no switch that turns off the Constitution. One of the most dangerous concepts out there is the greater good. The greater good is the sum total of everybody's individual decisions. That's what is the greater good. The public interest is the sum total of everybody's individual decisions. That's what's in the public interest. So the public, so the collective greater good or the collective public interest always has to be based on the sum total of the individual decisions. But you have to have the individual decisions. See, governments for ever since, you know, the very first government, which created the very first emergency, did it to maintain control or gain control. This idea that this pandemic allowed any government entity to do any restriction to take your constitutional rights away was bogus. It was always bogus. We said it was bogus from the very first, way back in February. You know, when I proposed the bill that Congress can only spend half its budget for the pandemic hoax on vaccines, the other half had to be spent on killing the damn virus. That was back in February. Okay, this has only just been discovered, and Dr. Fascist was already pushing his vaccine, you know, mandate ideology on everybody. But that is a manufactured crisis. This is a plandemic. None of this is real.
Yeah.
The virus is real, but everything about the government, this is all false. This is all propaganda. This is all about maintaining control. And you've expressed perfectly the idea that a lot of people have. And I always say on the show, assumptions are stranger than truth, okay? And the assumption is that the greater good will be served if we cooperate with the government and solve this pandemic. No. The greater good will be served if we tell the damn government to shut the hell up and we will make our own decisions. You got to put this in perspective. And the idea that they're, you know, what is the government interest? The government is in the vaccine business, okay? You know, would you take advice on cigarettes from Marlboro, you know, if cigarettes were treated like vaccines, if the government were in the tobacco business, cigarettes would be mandated. You'd have to smoke a pack a day, or you couldn't work, or you couldn't go to, you know, a restaurant. I mean, put it in terms of cigarettes. Well, you can't do that. Those things are dangerous. Well, okay, we know that now, but what if they're mandated? You know, what if the government was in the tobacco business, which actually were, they were doing tobacco subsidies. So they were actually in the business. But, you know, there is no greater good beyond individual rights. There is no greater public interest beyond individual rights. There is no crisis that you have to sacrifice your rights for. And that's, and the government convinces people they are. And that's the whole basis of our Constitution. When you need the Constitution the most is when the government wants to take your rights away. And if they use a pandemic or a war or 9/11 with the Patriot Act or anything that happens, anything that the government does to create or take advantage of an emergency or crisis to take your rights away, that's when you need the Constitution the most. Make sense?
Well, and I certainly agree with you. I'm just giving you the perspective from...
No, I understand.
From, I think, the average citizen.
Right.
That,
and I want to change that perspective.
Yeah, no, it's not right. And I know it allows for overstep and overreach and trampling on the Constitution, but just as a realist saying, you know, while it's not right, I think the majority of people were agreeable that, yes, we'll do this. We'll go along with it.
And that's why we're a republic and not a democracy. In a democracy, you can have your rights voted away. We will never be a democracy. We actually have a guaranteed republic. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution guarantees that we are a republic, which means it doesn't matter if the general population wants to vote your rights away. They can't do it. The purpose of a republic is to prevent the majority of people who can be bought or scared into giving up their rights and voting them away. That's what a republic is for. That's why a democracy is a lynch mob and a republic is a trial with evidence and rules. That's the difference. That's what separates a republic from a mob, from a tyranny. Democracy is the fastest road to tyranny. I don't give a damn if everybody wants to give their rights away. I don't care if I'm the only person in this country that wants to stand up and say this is wrong. I'm still right. Okay, and I still have the right to my freedom, even if I'm the only person in the country that wants to exercise it. So you can't base freedom on what the majority feels or wants, because first of all, the majority is told what to feel and want, you know, through big tech and propaganda and media that works with the government. It's part of the media, government, pharmaceutical, industrial complex to push COVID vaccines on people that are keeping the disease alive. You know it's keeping the disease alive. That's the whole purpose of all this crap. The vax mandates, the mask mandates, the lockdowns, everything like this is designed to keep COVID alive. This would have died out July 4th. I've got the CDC charts to prove it. It was headed for zero death rate around July 4th. And I've still got the charts. I can show them to you. This is all manufactured. Anything that happened after July 4th is manufactured. Okay. Vaccine. What are you in medical professions? What's the normal vaccine? 10 to 15 weeks and it's gone. What's the standard vaccine? What's standard virus? Regular variant, alpha variant. 10 weeks?
Oh my gosh.
15 weeks?
I don't know.
A flu bug. How long does a flu bug last? Winter? It's gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone comes back next year?
Three months.
Viruses life cycle at the most, what, 3 months? Maybe?
Yeah.
Unless you save it. Now, how do you save it? Vaccine mandates, lockdowns. You know, you get people scared. You ruin their immune systems. You shred their lives apart. You cause them to panic. The panic causes them to lose their immune system because they're so stressed out they can't have it. And the virus loves it. You put people in their homes. You put people of like genetic material together, right? And so the virus says, oh, this is great. I got a nice warm environment here. I'm going to spread to this whole family. And that's how it works. See, everything the government did was designed to save COVID. It wasn't designed to stop it. That's why we still have COVID. COVID would have been gone July 4th of 2020, COVID Independence Day. And now, do you really want to give up your individual rights knowing that the government has saved COVID and not people so they can sell vaccines?
No. I mean, I'm on your side.
So don't worry about what the public perception is. Don't worry about what most people think or what most people want. Most people are told what to think and want.
No, I'm just saying that was the mindset last year when this broke out, and we didn't have the knowledge and the information that it was a plandemic back then.
We knew. I mean, how did I know? How did Judy Mikovits know? How did all these people know? How did people around the country know? We knew. We knew this is all a hoax. Jean,
the thing is, we spend every day learning about this, being told we knew last year. It's like, it's not doing us any good now.
True.
No, it's not. It's like, all you can do is keep going on, but we could be using our time talking about a lot of different things versus rehashing that we knew this over a year ago. It's like, this is a pandemic. People are dying. I've got a cousin in the hospital that may not live, and we're talking about tooting our own horns. That's needless. What can we do now to make people more aware? It doesn't matter what we did a year ago. That's in the past. All we can do is from this day forward.
No, I agree with you there, but see, the perception, see, what I'm trying to do with Cindy is take those perceptions that she has and that regular folks have and change that. And the thing is, I want to make people realize that we did have the knowledge that certain of us were reporting.
But
this is doing
good now.
You I think that's so.
You're just tooting your own horn. All you can do now is educate them. But it doesn't matter that you knew last year. Because you know what? If last year what you said didn't work out, you wouldn't be saying it this year. But because it worked out, then it's like, oh, look what we knew. It's like, I wish more people would have listened and more people would have followed it. But my cousin who's in the hospital, he knew what he should have did. Yeah. But unfortunately, I've not been able to contact him and he can't talk right now. So I don't know if he actually followed through with what we had talked about months ago. But it's a moot point now because he's where he's at.
No, I understand. I understand. But in order to change, we do both. We look back and we go forward. But you have to understand where you are. But it's so important, I believe, to make sure that folks understand what the public good interest is and what the greater good is, and to change that perception. The only way I know how to do it is to go over the information that we know. Okay, and we have new information all the time. That's why I have all these folks on the show, like Cindy, to report the latest medical information and the latest groups. So we're moving ahead. We're moving ahead with Jonathan right now because I want to get to his report. So Cindy, like I say, if you got some time, stick around. If not, then great report, great discussion. Take this to your friends. Take this to the doctors. Take this to everybody that you know and say, look, you may want to modify your position on what you think you know, on what you think you know about the Constitution. Okay. Now, Gene's absolutely right. I think I am too. so we're gonna wrestle with this for a while. I think it's important to realize that people did know, and I think it's also important to as Gene says, to move ahead. I think both are important. So last word to you, and then I'm gonna get to Jonathan.
Well, I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, and rest up because it's not over, and We go into regular session the first week in January, and we really, really need to focus on getting medical discrimination out of our society because it just starts there. Then we become Louisiana, where it's restaurant discrimination. So not to be the Debbie Downer around Christmas time, but the fight isn't over. We might be taking, a little focus off of it to celebrate, the season, but it's not over, and we can't let it be over.
And I'll be broadcasting next week. In fact, I'll be broadcasting Friday, too. Friday the 24th is our anniversary. And then mark 3 years on the air. We start our fourth year after Christmas. Yep. So that'll be our anniversary show. Yeah, yeah. So it'll be the day before. You'll be on our anniversary eve.
Awesome. My thoughts and prayers are with your cousin, Gene. I'm sorry to hear that. I think
that's
it. Just enjoy the time with your families and rest up and get your gloves back on in the new year.
Yeah. And you want to give any contact information?
Oh, Citizens for Medical Freedom. Citizens, the number 4, Medical Freedom. You can find us on Facebook, Telegram, and Gab. And still working on that website, but we hope to have that launched in the coming weeks. That's it for now.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you. God bless.
We'll be right back.
All right.
It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago, that yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice, pictures on the wall of great minds who advance the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial, many times, that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. All right, Jonathan, you've been listening for a little while. I was kind of on a roll there, so otherwise I would have included you in the conversation. But since we have the whole rest of the show, feel free to comment. And then we have, of course, everything else we might want to talk about. Looks like Cindy's still with us, which is great. So we'll get a chance to cover all kinds of different issues. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
And I dialed in early just to see if you were talking about me behind my back. But no,
well,
that
all the time.
Well, I feel like
that's all we do, Jonathan. That's all we do is talk about you behind your back. Come on, this is Action Radio. This is, you know, backstabbing radio. We did the best we can. I'm just kidding.
I did get to see that. You know, it's a very difficult thing. I certainly we pray and urge everyone to pray for Cindy's. I guess was there a cousin?
No, it's Gene. It's Gene's cousin.
Oh, Gene's cousin. That you know, that for healing and things. There's a lot. There's always more going on than we can talk about. So, but I am kind of. I don't know. I don't want to give it a negative word. I'm prompted, I guess, to kind of jump in with, you know, a constitutional law intervention about these things, even though, and it's somewhat related to some of the things we want to talk about. And if you'll forgive me for, you know, kind of jumping in on that, I think it's a huge series of topics. I have one person.
Feel free. That's why I have you on the show.
I have one person I care about extremely well, and she's very, very talented and knowledgeable, but tends towards wanting to make things simple when they're not. You know, what one is very used to editing something to make it simpler, but that doesn't mean that life gets simpler. And so some of the things that are going on in our country, that the conversation that you just had, and some of the that it implicates, deals with the fact that it's just not simple. You know, government deals with a clash of great compromises, and it's just, and we don't want to believe it. We want to believe it's just Schoolhouse Rock. It's just a Norman Rockwell painting. I think people came back from World War II and they were exhausted, and they just wanted to live life, and they allowed the government to run away with, you know, because they just wanted to turn inward and believe that government was good. And with the Norman Rockwell painting, maybe people don't even know who Norman Rockwell is these days, but just sort of this rah-rah Muhammad apple pie. And the fact is that government is a, especially in our country, is a difficult set of compromises in tension with each other, you know, pulling against each other. And it's just not simple. For example, I'm tired still. I kind of pulled it all night or night before last and helped write a lawsuit for Ali Alexander, who I didn't know before, but he created Stop the Steal.
Okay.
He's one of the leaders there about, you know, about the fact that the joint session of Congress, the select committee to create Democrat campaign ads about January 6th. My word.
That's a great characterization.
It's just a giant campaign commercial and at taxpayer expense. So anyway,
it's propaganda, just like the impeachments were propaganda. It's a continuation of propaganda at public expense.
The Democrats and the left know nothing else. They don't have policies that work. They don't understand. They don't know how to think. All they do is feel. And so, but they're excellent at public relations and emotional manipulation. And they're excellent in some of the same concepts here because they're excellent because conservatives are so bad at it. Conservatives don't want to believe in persuading anyone. They don't want to believe in public relations. They want to believe that the truth should stand on its own, the shining, you know, statue of gold on the hill, and it doesn't need to be defended because the truth is,
Well, they don't even use aggressive words. They don't even use words like we do, like gelding old party or Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic drug pusher. They won't even get into terms like that. And Cindy, I know you're still on the line. You can ask Jonathan a question. Don't feel like you have to sit back here.
A fly on the wall.
Oh, no. If you have a question or comment, feel free. But Jonathan, these people don't even engage. The Republicans are gutless, wimps. They're hopeless. They're geldings. That's why I call them the gelding old party. They're a bunch of castrated horses walking around uselessly. You know, can't do anything.
But it starts.
And they won't engage.
I came to Washington in 1985 after, and was an intern for Connie Mack, Congressman Connie Mack,
from
Florida.
Okay.
And I've been watching this a long time, and I rub shoulders with these people, and they are atrocious at persuading anybody because down deep they don't believe they should have to. They believe the truth.
Wow.
And there shouldn't be any, you know, they're doing a terrible job because they're not trying and they don't want to try. They think that if I just believe good thoughts, that the truth will win out. And it won't.
That's Never
and,
Neverland.
You know, and
that's Peter Pan. That's Never Neverland. That's you know, just believe and it'll happen. That's nonsense.
Right. And it comes from some errors within the church, too, that, you know, I don't need to go out and tell anybody about God. If I just believe good things in my heart and I live a good life, someone will come up to me and ask me what's different about you, which has probably never happened in the history of the universe that anybody has come up to somebody and said, tell me why you know you're so different. You have to
well they
to,
ask that of
know,
me
so
for different reasons, Jonathan.
Yes, well, I can see that. Okay, yeah. that you got me there. But the point is that we're really terrible at it because down deep we don't try. We don't want to try. And so that's the only thing that the liberals are good at is persuading, including because we have abandoned the field on the right. But anyway, so there's so many things about this. This is not simple. And you know, so I'm writing this motion, which I'll get back to, and I'll get back to the previous conversation, is that people think, well, shouldn't Congress be able to investigate whether or not the president is engaged in crime or wrongdoing? And I would be rude if I gave, you know, if I gave full volume expression to my answer. No, that is not Congress's job. Yeah. And he says, well, you know, the executive branch investigates and prosecutes crime. Congress does not. Now, to the average person, you say, well, that doesn't make sense. But that's the way it is. It's like, well, you know, what if the president is hiding something? Well, too bad, because that's not the government we have. We do not have Congress like Parliament with roving star chambers and, you know, and arresting people based on, you know, suspicion that they don't toe the line. I mean, the idea of the January 6th committee gathering all this information about everybody from the House, I wrote in the motion we're going to talk about a little bit later, mm-hmm. about filing it, is how is what the House is doing different from what King George's redcoats were doing? We have the Fourth Amendment because the redcoats were bashing in people's doors and grabbing their papers. Isn't our modern-day Congress doing the exact same thing?
Well, this reminds me of the House on American Committee. Remember the House on American Committee, HUAC? They were trying to out all the communists, and now the communists actually are running the government. But it was the same kind of horrible thing that based on what you said or what you thought, you're being persecuted by these reactionary politicians that wanted to suppress communism to the point where they were suppressing, you know, thought and Hollywood and entertainers and actors. And they might have been communists, and that's okay. I don't care, as long as they can express their point of view. I don't care about that. But it's the same kind of thing that you're being persecuted for what you believe, in the same way that the Trump supporters in the D.C. gulag, the political prisoners, were prosecuted for what they believe and who they voted for. It's purely a political consideration. It's nothing to do with legality, nothing to do with the Constitution. If it did, they wouldn't be there. Now, my big problem is, why hasn't Congress closed that jail, or at least the Republicans come out with a daily press conference calling for that jail to be closed down? That's what they really should be doing, and they're not engaging.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to you. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is that, and we, you know, there's lots to talk about, but I'm going to start. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of previewing a few other things. I'm going to talk about some of these things in more detail if you'll let me.
We got the rest of the show, Jonathan. Take your time. Yeah. I got to take one break, though. Partway through, we're going to play our founding moments piece.
Sure.
But other than that, you know, I'll do that in about 20 minutes. Yeah. Go ahead.
What did my father always said something about, if the creek don't rise and the sun comes up or something like that. He's like, you know, mm-hmm. well, it's just a funny thing. But anyway,
yeah.
So the thing is, back to the previous discussion,
mm-hmm.
we have a life, society, political philosophy, and our particular government here in this country are clashes between competing interests and the attempt to compromise things. And it's not simple. Like I have a dear friend who wants everything to be simple. She says less is more, and she says no, less is not always more. And she will insist.
Yeah, less
is
sometimes less.
Sure.
Well, let me ask you a question. Something Cindy brought up earlier, and there's a common perception. I think this will help our discussion a little bit. She was talking about the greater good and the public interest. And my contention is the greater good and the public interest is the ways the government uses to oppress people and destroy individual rights and individual freedom. That the only greater good is the sum total of everybody's individual decision. The only public interest is the sum total of everybody's individual decision. You know, but the greater good is not, it's not a legal concept. It's not a constitutional concept. It's certainly not life, liberty, and property. I mean, the greater good is the government oppressing people, deciding what they want to do. They create the greater good, not the people. And if the government's creating the greater good and determining what it is, you don't have a free society anymore. Yet that's the perception, that the greater good is the job of government. I'm not picking on Cindy for this, but that's a very common perception, and I think we need to change that. Jonathan?
Well, that's one analysis, and I think what, you know, we need to remember that our founding fathers, both before and after the attempt to form a government, they surveyed everything in political
mm-hmm.
thought.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they didn't just wake up morning and say, what the hell, why don't we do it this way? They surveyed all previous political, philosophy and attempts and things like that. And
mm-hmm.
and that's one way of looking at it. And there, you know, that's one analysis. I've been binge-watching a stupid comedy called The Good Place, in which it's a comedy about someone about what happens when they go to heaven, and one of the guys is a political is a philosopher. So they explore
mm-hmm.
and somehow they make it all of these different ways of looking at things. Is it determined?
Hmm.
You know, is something good because of consequences? Is something good because of its inherent nature? Is it, you know, and because they're trying to, it's hard to explain. So it made me realize that there's lots of different philosophies that most of us never learn and never think about. Like you say, is greater good, as you described, based
mm-hmm.
on the inherent nature of what people are doing or how they're able to decide, or is it based upon the consequences? Is like what are the they discuss all these things in the silly comedy. And so there are different ways of looking at it. So my point is it's not simple. I mean, let's suppose we were in, first of all, obviously what you've been talking about a lot is that if you fight a disease with things that don't work, then right. guess what? It's not going to work. Back when AIDS came out, almost all of the apocalyptic discussions we were hearing about AIDS.
Yep.
And then they finally got around to doing things that work, and suddenly it went away, or mostly went away. You know, when you try to use something that doesn't work, the situation doesn't improve and it gets worse. When you use medicines that actually work, boom, it goes, you know, it shrinks. And so AIDS used to be the COVID of, you know, societal panic, mm-hmm. and driven by politics. They didn't want to look at what worked because that, you know, because it might cast aspersion, even not realistically, but just in the wildest of imagination, it might make the homosexual community feel bad, even if it wouldn't actually make any sense to you know, in some cases. But they didn't want to stigmatize the homosexual community, so they didn't do the things that would actually work. And then when they broke, and Dr. Judy Mikovits was in the middle of that, Dr. Fauci was a gigantic failure in that. His both qualifications in Washington come down to gigantic failures, so that's why they're qualified to take charge next time. So the thing is, suppose we take...
Well, there's a wonderful video that's out now. Excuse me, it's on Senator Ron Johnson, who made a speech before Congress, really outlining why we don't have ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and how Dr. Fascist, you know, back during the AIDS crisis, told everybody that you could get AIDS from casual contact, and that families had to be aware of this. And he was spreading all these lies about AIDS because it generated fear and allowed him to push this drug AZT, which didn't work. And these New York doctors did their own research, and they came up with this drug called Bactrin. And Bactrin really, you know, suppressed AIDS, you know, hugely. It was amazingly successful. But because Dr. Fauci banned it, you know, some 17,000, you know, gay men died of AIDS. Didn't have to because it was the wrong drug. And exactly, I mean, that was his practice for now. He's doing exactly the same thing with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin because he's so invested in his profits, his obsession with money and power, that he's willing to sacrifice any number of hundreds of thousands of lives, you know, simply to, and he's like the Joseph Mengele of today. He's like Mengele and Goebbels rolled into one. You know, he's a propagandist and a medical extremist using, you know, horrendous means to make profits and experiment on people, you know, with his new and dangerous drugs, when we all know the simple ones that have been approved for 60 years work. So I don't know a greater crime in humanity than this guy right now and what he's doing. This is the greatest preventable medical holocaust in history. And yet here we are.
Dr. Fauci probably does not know what the inside of his office looks like because he's too busy being in TV studios.
Come back, fascist. But I like calling him Dr. Fascist. It seems to make a better ring to it. Feel
so
free.
Let's bring it
you don't have to, but, you
let's,
know.
Let's,
go ahead.
Let's suppose it was 1918 and, you know, an estimate. You know, in the wake of World War II, with all the death and disease, and probably unburied bodies, and you know, whatever.
I think it was World War One.
World War One. Excuse me. An estimated 50 to 100 million people, which is how could they be that vague about it? But you're in the wake of a world war.
Right.
You know, died of the Spanish flu,
mm-hmm.
and. What would you do along these lines? What's necessary? You know, let's suppose that Congress, not some executive order or some bureaucrat like Dr. Fauci, that he is not even in charge of CDC. You realize,
right.
He's not the head of the National Institutes of Health. He's not even at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He's in a research arm where he should just, you know, shut up. It's not his place.
He's a grant writer.
And, you know,
that's his job. He's a grant writer, basically, to universities for pharmaceutical products. That's what he does.
He's not the head of the Health and Human Services. It's really not his place, except that he's just able to schmooze the news media.
He's not even a virologist. He doesn't have a virology or a microbiology degree. He's got a basic medical degree. This guy's the most underqualified expert I've ever seen in my life. and I use the term expert, right, you know, disparagingly. He has no qualifications for what he's doing other than the bureaucratic paper pusher.
Suppose we felt it necessary as a society to do is the conversation before I got on and say that this is so serious we have to make some changes. We have to bend some rules. Congress should do that. Not an individual, not an executive order, not a bureaucrat. And it should be a major discussion, and that discussion should involve, like what we just talked about. Well, if we're going to give up some liberties to deal with this disease, does it work? You know,
see, I don't think you have to give up your liberties. See, this is where I disagree with everybody. You don't have to give up your liberties. If there's a program that the government wants to persuade us to take advantage of, then most people are going to do it. It's like the example of the draft in World War II was not necessary because the cause was just. Men by the millions, women too, but men by the millions, you know, signed up to serve in the armed forces to defeat Nazi Germany and Japan. That was not a problem. But the draft in Vietnam killed the war because it was an unjust war. People did not sign up. In fact, when the Vietnam protest stopped, when the draft stopped, not when the war stopped, the war went 3 years longer than the draft because the draft was unjust. It was for an unjust war. So people made the decision. So would you sacrifice liberties and say you have to draft people to go fight an unjust war? No, because the people were right. They were right not to fight the Vietnam War. Okay, and they were right to fight World War II. So they didn't need the draft. Okay, in the same way here, if you have a vaccine that works, if you have a program that works, if you have a quarantine that works, now granted, there's still a due process procedure you can go through to quarantine people because it doesn't, you know, affect their lives beyond restraining them, as opposed to a vaccine that affects their biochemistry for the rest of their life. Okay, that's a permanent change to people. You give someone a vaccine, that is a permanent change. Governments have no business doing that. But if the cause is just, and if it makes sense, and if the program is good, people are going to do it voluntarily. You don't have to mandate it. All right. So this is why I say you never have to give up your liberties. I don't care how severe the pandemic, you can still have all your constitutional protections. This idea that suddenly there's an emergency, you have to give up your rights, is the cause of the emergency. You know, because people are convinced to give up their rights. Cindy, go ahead.
I think that's what I was alluding to back when this first started, was that we were willing to do things that seem unconstitutional. You know, stay in your house and don't go to work for 2 weeks. I think we were agreeable to that because we didn't know. Not that we needed to have people arrested that decided, no, I'm not going to stay in my house for 2 weeks.
See, that's the difference. Anybody that willingly wants to stay home, if the government said, we have a stay-at-home plan, we really think you should stay at home, we think this will stop the spread, and people that want to stay at home, great. People that want to wear masks, no problem. But for those of us that don't, they can't mandate that. And the first thing I did when Governor DeSantis ordered a stay-at-home program was I went driving. I rolled down my windows and sang country music loudly out the window without a mask. Why? Because I was being defiant, because it was wrong, because I knew that it had nothing to do with this virus. Okay, I don't, you know, and not that I'm a genius that could figure this out. I just spent 3 hours on the internet looking up things that killed viruses. That's how I knew this was a hoax back in February of 2020. Okay, but the thing is, if it's a good program and people want to do it, great. If the government wants to persuade us, no problem. If they want a mandate, that's what the problem is. And if that mandate goes against our constitutional rights for life, liberty, and property, to have an unreasonable, to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, to not have due process. Now, if you've got a disease, communicable disease, and you're exhibiting symptoms, okay, and a doctor's determined, yeah, you're really sick, dude, we've got to quarantine you. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that because you've been given your due process, okay? So the only way that you can limit rights is due process. If someone commits a crime, we're limiting their rights by throwing them in jail, obviously. But you've got due process. You've got a conviction. You've got a constitutionally approved procedure to do that. And the same thing with a pandemic. Okay, if you've got a pandemic, excuse me, if you've got a pandemic, you still have all your rights. You still have to go through due process. But if you're exhibiting symptoms, but they were saying that people without symptoms were killing grandma. You can't do that. You can't just take an entire population and quarantine the healthy people. That's where they exceeded the Constitution. That's why mandates cannot be legal. You cannot give up your rights. You can't vote your rights away. You can't give them away. You can't be mandated to lose them. You know. Now, if they amend the Constitution, there is a procedure for that, and they can do that. But your birthright, your basic freedom, no one can take that away from you, whether it's popular will or not. That's the difference between a democracy and a republic.
And part of all the moving pieces here is that you talk about, you know, what is the threat? What will this do anything about the threat? And it is appalling to hear people like Dr. Fauci and Joe Biden saying, you know, we gave you the chance to do this voluntarily, so now we're going to force you. Well, then it was never voluntary in the first place. I mean, it's such an appalling attitude. But you're like, one of the considerations, if this were dealt with properly, or at least remotely properly, in Congress and everything, that should be part of the question. Like, if have we persuaded people? No, the Democrats went out there and said it's not going to work, and, you know, Trump is trying to poison you. And I'm not, you know, the Democrats, I forget who had that compilation. That's an excellent compilation. Then, you know, do we need to, you know, is it actually necessary to do anything? And the answer is probably no. Because you haven't explained to people why this is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't, you know, consulted them.
Well, they lied.
Intelligence.
They lied,
well,
Jonathan. Neil Ferguson in Britain in the Imperial College, the one that makes all the bogus climate change things that we're all going to die in 12 years. You know, this same guy that said that Britain was going to lose 200,000 people, we were going to lose 2 million. And I proved that they picked that figure because it exceeded the 1.8 million of the original, you know, 2007 pandemic guidelines for a Category 5 pandemic. You know, so these numbers were picked on purpose. They were propaganda numbers. They weren't real numbers. The actual rate was the mortality rate is less than 1%. If they took just any time to study that, they would have realized it. You know, so these were all bogus numbers. They were using faulty models to use as propaganda against people to impose mandates. That's why you always maintain your constitutional rights, because it prevents the government from making up bogus stuff to scare you into giving up your rights. That's the whole point, Jonathan.
Well, and that's part of the difficult compromise. And like I say, and as I said in the, you know, in the J6 committee, you know, it may sound like a good idea at first that the Congress, you know, should look at these things, but when you look into it, it isn't. But the thing is that, you know, do we need to do something?
Mm-hmm.
Are we unpersuade the American people, or are such transparent and obvious and repeated lies something that the American people are intelligently noticing? You know, is it the problem that our argument, you know, maybe your argument stinks, or maybe it doesn't matter what argument make, we remember the last five arguments you made and you know, mm-hmm. we're tuning you out. Or is it something that so maybe if it went through a congressional, if we had, you know, an honest Congress, through some kind of public discussion, it would come down to the fact the problem is you guys are liars, and we can figure out that you're liars, and we're not fooled. And like
well,
you,
the,
what you said, like, the threat justify abridging liberties, or is it a lie about a threat, or not a lie, when we're balancing these things, are we talking about a threat or a made up threat? You know, that's part of the distinction that you're touching on too. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, but why would you ever make the decision that immediately when you have a threat or an emergency, you have to give up liberties? We make this jump automatically. It makes no sense to me. That's a total disconnect from reality of the Constitution. The thing is, if you have a threat, you deal with it, but you deal with it within the constitutional liberties. Here's another problem too. The Congress never considered the alternatives. The problem is when you leap immediately from threat and give up liberties, you choke off all the debate. So I wrote a bill back in February. I'm going to drag it out and publish it, post it here. But I wrote a bill in February of 2020. Okay, this isn't before, you know, we did the March 2nd thing where I discovered, you know, chloroquine from the study from Diderot in Marseille, France. But back in February, I wrote a bill saying that Congress has to spend half the money on killing the virus and then half the money on the vaccines. The problem was that people got so obsessed with giving up their rights and being paranoid that they never even looked to other alternatives. And the alternative to a vaccine is to kill the damn virus, okay? And, you know, but the problem is that the immediate leap to giving up liberties cut off debate. So this is another reason for preserving your liberties, because as you preserve your liberties, you say, okay, we have to maintain our liberties. That's the Constitution. That's the law. That's the supreme law of the land. We have a virus that we don't know what's going to happen exactly. So how do we preserve our liberties and deal with this virus? Well, let's start talking about options. Let's think of the options that we have. And this is why the free flow of debate is dependent on maintaining your constitutional liberties 100%, including due process where you can, you know, limit liberties, but it has to be by due process. But the idea that you instantly give up liberties for the public good or in the public interest, or that you have to immediately sacrifice everything, cuts off debate, cuts off options. And then the government says, okay, we're going to cut your liberties. We have to do this. We have to do this. Okay. And that cuts off every other option. And the option that was never considered, that was never considered in Congress, never considered anywhere else, was killing the damn virus, except by certain doctors like Zelenko, like Raoult in France, and other, Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, who's been all, you know, we've had Zelenko and Mikovits on the show. These are the people who brought this out. But the thing was, and we did too, and yes, Gene, I'm tooting my own horn again, but the thing is, we were right. You were absolutely right that you have to consider the alternatives. You have to work within the Constitution, and you can find a solution without immediately sacrificing your rights. But this knee-jerk connection that automatically says, no matter what the emergency, the first thing we have to do is sacrifice your rights, proves that the emergency is designed to sacrifice your rights and designed to cut off alternatives. That's what I think. Jonathan?
No, I totally agree. And that's part of where, if it was, you know, discussed openly, like, you know, for example, it's like, we have to do this. Well, no, you don't.
Exactly.
But the unproven assertion standing on its own is part of it. You know, remember, it was 15 days to slow the spread. It wasn't even 15 days to stop the spread. It was 15 days to slow the spread. And now it's like a year and a half.
Where was 15 days to kill the damn virus? Where was 15 days to present the cure? Where was 15 days to look for the cure? None of that happened because the debate was controlled. The loss of liberties maintained the pandemic. The loss of liberties preserved COVID long after it would have died out in July of 2020. The loss of liberties is what has maintained the pharmaceutical, the big pharma, government, media, big tech industrial complex. It's the loss of liberties that is that has caused this thing to still be with us. That's the problem. That's the real casualty.
And that's when the solution is politically determined instead of practically or scientifically. I know science, I could choke talking scientifically because we, you know, science is dead. It's become consumed by politics. But the
and that's,
you know,
a loss of liberty.
So when you allow the partisan political processes, or as you say, the donors to decide what the solution is, then that violates so much of this debate and this balance of things. So
let me ask Cindy and Jean. Cindy, do you see, does this make sense to you that it's the loss of liberties that has maintained the virus, that's kept it alive and maintained the pandemic? Do you see how that connection
absolutely
that we're making here?
I think I was just speaking from the perspective of back in January of 2020 when they were able to say, we don't know. We don't know what's potentially going to happen. We can see the possibility of, you know, millions of people dying. It was acceptable, I think, to most people to say, okay, because we don't know, we'll go along.
Yes, but this is the thing. That was the problem. But in going along, in sacrificing our liberties, they actually made what was potentially a bad situation unbelievably bad. It's the government that made it bad. It's the loss of liberties that has caused this entire problem and caused these perceptions. It was still the knee-jerk reaction that, if most people believe, and quite honestly, I don't care because, just as the government and the pharmaceutical industrial, big pharma, big government, big tech are trying to convince people of what most people believe, you know, our job here is to do the opposite, but do it with truth as opposed to manipulation and propaganda.
But what if the result had been different? What if it did wipe out half the population? What if this truly was a pandemic?
Right.
You know, we have the benefit of hindsight now, looking back to it was made up.
Well, if it did, would that still be justification for destroying our liberties? You know, if it's going to happen, if something is that dangerous, it's going to destroy humanity anyway, but you don't destroy your liberties in the process. You know, as bad as the plague was, as bad as the Spanish flu was, you can still fight it and maintain your liberties. Your liberties don't have to be sacrificed. What was gained by losing liberties? What was gained by quarantining healthy people? What was gained by mass mandates? These all perpetuated the disease.
Now we know nothing, but at the time we didn't know.
Well, we did
That's
know.
What I'm saying.
This is my argument that we did know the cures were out there. We knew hydroxychloroquine killed COVID. We knew the chloroquine killed COVID. We knew that the African countries weren't getting it because everybody was on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine to prevent malaria. We knew that
back in
Sweden,
January of 2020, I wasn't hearing that.
Well, not in January. January, we just discovered the disease. I think the Trump quarantine, the Trump blocking of flights from China was January. February, we knew. And March, we certainly knew.
Well,
I've got articles from back then. There is no pandemic. I've got articles from February, March, and April of 2020 stating very clearly there is no pandemic. We've got a cure. Those articles are suppressed. You can't find them anymore. Jonathan, go ahead.
15 days to slow the spread, I think, was mid-March.
Right.
And it was, you know, from the federal perspective, it was voluntary.
CDC does is voluntary. CDC can't enforce their guidelines. People are volunteering to do it, wrongly, I think.
Right.
So the CDC doesn't have any power to make regulations. They're kind of a for-profit corporation.
I don't know that I could say that it would never be necessary to abridge some liberties. I don't know. But I do
You could by due process. Liberties were abridged without due process.
But here's what I'm trying to say, is that because it has become easy to abridge liberties, people don't look into, you know, people the government first, you know, self-interested propaganda for ulterior motives and just general sloppiness and rushing to judgment is enabled when the government can just quickly abridge your liberties and not think about it too much. Because all of these questions, you know, the thing is, it should be, you know, a national debate, probably in Congress. I know Congress is far from perfect. But so that every other issue is explored. And it wasn't. It was, you know, the first step.
Well, that's what I was saying.
Was the last resort.
Yeah.
And so all of these things should have been investigated and it probably wouldn't have been seen that way. All of the things you're raising should have been front and center and considered first rather than ignored and suppressed because
whose responsibility, though, was it to do that? It wasn't the average citizen. We don't have the knowledge or the background to do that. Who does someone like me rely on to do that?
That's a good question.
Well, if we actually had a Congress, maybe, rather than just a bunch of, you know, of lobbyists loving backstabbers.
This is a great point, though. Experts, you know, who do you determine the experts? Well, what people think of as the experts as government people. See, I see the experts
Fauci
as non-government people. Now, he's not an expert. No, he's not even a virologist. He's not even a microbiologist. He's
but
not an
that's
expert.
Who,
a,
that's who Trump
okay,
put
so,
forward
that,
right.
so,
to be
so
the
who's
expert.
An expert? So who's an expert, Dr. Fascist or Dr. Zelenko, who cured thousands of people in his Jewish community upstate New York? You know, he was the one that published the results of hydroxychloroquine and sent it to the president in March, I think, of 2020. You know, we knew the cure then because he used it.
But
the cure worked.
The average citizen with a Republican president, that's who he put forth. So that's who someone like me listened to.
Right.
But also, you look at Fauci's background and you think, well, he knows what he's talking about based on everything he did in the past, which when you really look into it, you realize he didn't. But back then, we didn't know that at first. And so I think we did. You can say all you want and toot your own horn, but you're wrong. You're wrong. And it's like there was so much information. We had to dig through what was truth, what was not truth. And you can say, well, the thing is, you picked the truth right away. But for some people, when you were digging through the stuff, going through the muck, it took a while to figure out what was truth and what wasn't.
And I'll be the first one to say, I'm not as smart as you, Greg. I'm relying on the people that I have elected to put forth the experts that are going to tell me, guide me, give me the information that I need to make the right decision. And we had a president in office that I trusted to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've really hit a nail on the head here in terms of trust. I mean, I'm not a very trusting person when it comes to experts, unless I can verify for myself. Now, I'm not the smartest guy around by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, yeah, well, see, the thing is, and this is where I challenge experts, because an expert has to prove to me their expertise, okay? So I'm not going to take it at face value. And so if it makes sense, I'm going to put it through my filter of logic and reason. Is it logical and reasonable? I mean, Dr. Fascius was well known from the 1980s to be wrong on AIDS. You know, that was pretty well documented. He won the
well,
said in 2005.
Well, he wasn't wrong enough to be removed from authority.
Exactly, and that's a failure
that's
of government.
Jonathan. That's because Washington doesn't run on success.
Yeah.
It's like the greatest, you know, whether it's elections or whatever it is, people who utterly fail are at the top of the list of, you know, we have a corrupt news media where they decide based on who they glad hand and have, you know, liquid lunches with. We live in a corrupt bubble inside Washington where success doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
So then,
you know,
how do we change it? I mean,
well, you do what we're doing here. We discussed
partly
it.
By
but
becoming
self-aware. Yeah. You're responsible, Cindy and Jean and Jonathan and me. We are responsible for challenging the experts. That's part of our civil liberties. It gets back to the same thing.
That's what we're doing.
You have
now,
to have a free flow of information. You know, but the suppression of liberties is the first victim of COVID. You know, and so the information was out there. Now, the point is that when you say we didn't know, I'm going to still challenge you on this because a lot of people did know. There were a lot of articles about this, but there was a propaganda war against knowing. There was a suppression of the information. There was a propaganda campaign. There was a censorship campaign by big tech. The truth was always out there. The truth's been out there.
And we know that's
not
going away.
Yeah. Now we know where the enemies are of truth.
I'm sorry.
But the suppression of our, again, it all comes back to maintaining your constitutional liberties and rights is the way through a crisis. Because this crisis has been exacerbated because of the denial of rights and the perceptions that people are given of what you thought the truth was. You think you can rely on experts, but you really can't. You know, you have to challenge them. You have to check their motivations, especially government experts. Do you rely on experts for climate change, for example? Do you think the world's going to end in 12 years? And if not, why not? The experts are saying so. Cindy?
Common sense, but that's not enough to argue against an expert.
Sure it is.
You're not going to win.
Well, check the motivations. What are the motivations of the expert? That's what it really comes down to. The motivations of Dr. Fascius is to make money on his licenses and his patents. The guy's got over 1,000 medical patents. Well, why would a bureaucrat need 1,000 medical patents?
Well,
Jonathan?
The thing is that I believe that, you know, I'm hoping, I'm seeing the death of the cult of experts. You know, we have, again, coming out of World War II, and we believe in the government, even though the government actually made so many disastrous mistakes during World War II, like the torpedo that didn't work and everything. We came back and we were content to live our lives and try to give our children a better future and just trust the government. That's dying. I hope, I believe that the idea
question
that
authority.
We worship experts.
Yeah,
what?
Question authority in the 1960s, question authority. I still do. I took
that
seriously.
But the idea that the experts are godlike, really, in the heart, more than just a metaphor, that they are our saviors, is dying, and it needs to die. And we can't just accept what the experts have been saying, and that's, you know, they've gotten away with it because we've, you know, how does P.T. Barnum sell flimflam? Because somebody buys it, So I think that has to die, and it is dying, and like nobody's gonna, and of course we're seeing the death spasms of Dr. Fauci saying, you know, you're attacking science, you know, well what you're selling us isn't science, and we're not buying it anymore, and so you see all these people in Washington, politicians, media, and everybody else, and they're going through these death spirals of the fact that nobody's listening to us anymore. Yeah, duh, you know, you've lied to us too many times. It's a lie too far. And so, the biggest way to cure it is to stop listening to them. And that's happening. You know, the fact that people are not taking the vaccine. You have health professionals not taking the vaccine.
Yeah, what does that say?
And
they're the experts.
Yeah, in large numbers. So, and I have a friend from my, he used to be from the church, who's just apoplectic about this. Why don't people listen? Like, I said, look, you've got health professionals who refuse to take the vaccine. So the, I forgot what I was going to say. So the, but you know, checking into whether, oh, I was going to say, because Dr. Fauci's big reason for not, you know, he's public. I have a, my old friend, Gordon Reardon, my boss used to say there's the reason and then there's the excuse. Then there's the real reason. There's the, you know, so somebody, we say something in a meeting, it's like, well, wait, is that the excuse or is that the real reason? With Dr. Fauci, his big thing against hydroxychloroquine is we haven't spent 20 years in long-term longitudinal studies, double-blind. You know, double-blind doesn't make any sense. The guy, you know, double-blind studies only make sense if you're talking about how somebody feels. You know, either you have the disease or you don't. You don't need a double-blind study. But he says, like, we haven't had these long-term studies. But when it comes to the vaccine, even less of a yeah.
Got some background noise. Someone's making some noise here.
Very little.
Yeah. Who's making the crinkly noises?
Very little track record with the vaccine, but he nitpicks things that do have a track record.
Well, he knew back in 2005 that SARS-CoV-1 was killed with hydroxychloroquine. This is why he's such a hypocrite. And that was known back, you know, like I said, that was known way before we even had COVID. You know, well, there was SARS-CoV-1, you know, and so this is long-term knowledge, and this is stuff is out there. And this is why, you know, I still disagree with the idea that we didn't know, because people were made not to know, and that's the difference.
Okay,
it's one thing to not know. It's another thing to be made not to know. People were made not to know. And that
since
was,
we have this information that we know that Fauci has a track record that indicates he's playing out the same thing he did in the AIDS crisis.
Yep.
What's our recourse? You know, where are the attorneys that are then taking him down?
Good question, Jonathan. Who would get rid of this guy? How do we get rid of him? I would arrest him for crimes against humanity, but that's me. And I got that from Dr. Zelenko when he spelled out, you know, back in August of 2020, he really spelled out the pandemic to me. It's like, whoa, yeah, you're absolutely right. He's my expert. So, yeah, go ahead.
It's hard to sue government. It's hard to sue an individual government. Somebody has to actually be. There are people who could say, I was denied treatment, or well, actually it would be families, on a wrongful death. My family was denied treatment and they died. And it started to get to the point where a brave attorney and, you know, one with lots of money to, you know, to spend years fighting it could do that. I don't know why he hasn't been – well, the reason he hasn't been fired is because Trump derangement syndrome.
Well, Trump himself, Trump failed to fire
him.
Yeah,
Trump put him out there.
Well, see, and this is when I started criticizing Trump. Was back in February, March of 2020. I said he's got this wrong. This guy needs to go. You know, and this kind of stuff is crazy. But it's been going on for, you know, a long time. But you know, and people say, well, you're a Republican. You're never going to criticize Trump. I say, have you been listening the last couple of years? You know, I've been criticizing him since the very beginning. But he was so, and this is my biggest hesitation about him coming back in 2024. He's still talking ventilators. He's still taking
pushing
credit
the vaccine.
He still thinks the vaccine is actually a good idea. You know, that everybody should get it. I think he's dead wrong on that. And I think his failure this goes back to I got a whole timeline on all this stuff, but it goes back to when Obama gave Trump, you know, his pandemic playbook. And it was really instructions for Dr. Fascist to basically how to screw up the Trump administration in a couple of years. Because Fauci announced that there was going to be a pandemic in the Trump administration. We all knew it. You know, well, I didn't hear that then. I didn't hear it until a couple of years later, but he actually announced, you know, so those that were really watching this, you know, folks like Natural News and Children's Defense Network, you know, Robert Francis Kennedy Jr., those kind of folks, they were way out on the cutting edge, you know, and that's where I got my information from. It's like, oh, do you guys really know what's going on here? And so again, skeptical, but logic and reason. It makes sense once you get the history of how all this comes together. So, it's a crazy thing that's going on, but it still comes back down to liberties. Anyway, we're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes. I'm going to play something. Do you want to get on to January 6th after this, Jonathan? And I'm going to sort of propose my idea of the Jailhouse Rock concert.
Yeah.
To talk about that, and then we can get into some of these other things. Great discussion, everybody. And like I say, I appreciate all your disagreements. And, you know, feel free, which I'm glad you do. So I'll take a break here for a little bit. Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
Can I cap it off and take the next section? Because this is an example of experts. On, I think, Monday, the D.C. Attorney General sued the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys for supposed damages. And I got quoted, I don't know where someone just found me quickly, and I quoted it, said, you know, you can't file a fantasy in court. I think you're suing the wrong people. And then I got like five inquiries within an hour because all the journalists are crazy, and they saw one person quoted on it. So they just, you know, made a quick phone call with the same person over and over and over again. And that's Fauci. It's like, well, I don't know who to talk to, but, you know, let's just all go to the same person. So anyway, I thought that would be a teaser you take through your break and a transition.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you might find this interesting. Anti-Federalist number 7 talks about a lot of the problems that we're experiencing today, you know, from the Constitution. Constitution's not perfect, but it's better than the alternative of a martial law government. All right, back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The more I read of the prophecy apparent in the anti-federalist papers, forecasting the end of liberty and the beginning of federal oppression, should the Constitution be ratified, the more I'm convinced the anti-federalists were right, and that a modification of the Articles of Confederation would have been the far better course for this nation over ratifying the Constitution. We might have avoided our Civil War, and we might have even avoided the Marxist coup that stole our federal government with the willing cooperation of both major political parties. Anti-Federalist number 7 was written by Philanthropus, an anonymous citizen of Virginia, and published December 6, 1787. In his opening sentences, he talks about both his time in 1787 and our time in 2021. The time in which the Constitution or government of a nation undergoes any particular change is always interesting and critical. Enemies are vigilant, allies are in suspense, friends hesitating between hope and fear, and all men are in eager expectation to see what such a change may produce. But the state of our affairs at present is of such moment as even to arouse the dead. In his time, it was whether the Constitution would be ratified and what would happen to liberty. In our time, it's what has happened to overthrow constitutional government, and will it be restored? Once again, in prophecy, Philanthropus describes his time and ours. The new Constitution in its present form is calculated to produce despotism, thraldom, and confusion, and if the United States do swallow it, they will find it a bolus that will create convulsions to their utmost extremities. Were they mine enemies, the worst imprecation I could devise would be, may they adopt it. Forecasting some of our most grievous problems arising during the Constitution in force today, he said this: the Congress is having power without control to borrow money on the credit of the United States. They're having power to appoint their own salaries, and they're being paid out of the treasury of the United States, thereby, in some measure, rendering them independent of the individual states. They're being judges of the qualification and election of their own members, which by means they can get men to suit any purpose. Philanthropus then urges the continuation of the Articles of Confederation with these words: "Our present Constitution, with a few additional powers to Congress, seems better calculated to preserve the rights and defend the liberties of our citizens than the one proposed, without proper amendments. Let us therefore, for once, show our judgment and solidity by continuing it and prove the opinion to be erroneous, that levity and fickleness are not only the foibles of our tempers, but the reigning principles in these states." Regarding the men who would change to the new Constitution, he says, "There are men amongst us of such dissatisfied tempers that, place them in heaven, they would find something to blame, and so restless and self-sufficient that they must be eternally reforming the state. But the misfortune is, they always leave affairs worse than they find them. A change of government is at all times dangerous, but at present may be fatal, without the utmost caution, just after emerging out of a tedious and expensive war." In conclusion, Philanthropus gives us a plea for caution and a warning of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution. He was more right than he ever could have imagined. He says, "In the most limited governments, what wranglings, animosities, factions, partiality, and all other evils that tend to embroil a nation and weaken a state are constantly practiced by legislators. What then may we expect if the new Constitution be adopted as it now stands? The great will struggle for power, honor, and wealth. The poor become a prey to avarice, insolence, and oppression. And while some are studying to supplant their neighbors and others striving to keep their stations, one villain will wink at the oppression of another, the people will be fleeced, and the public business neglected. From despotism and tyranny, good Lord, deliver us." Maybe it's time to review the Articles of Confederation as a potential return form of government, as a way to break the insane power and control currently exercised by a federal government supposedly limited to certain delegated powers. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. All right, just a couple more things we have. We're also an affiliate warrior of Strikeforce energy drinks, and you can get them at strikeforceenergy.com. You'll get a 20% discount if you put the code WYL, that stands for Write Your Laws, so WYL code into your strikeforceenergy.com order, and you get 20% discount, and some of that helps Action Radio. So so we've joined them as well. So as we keep growing here at Action Radio, getting more sponsors, more listeners, more countries, it's really fascinating what's going on. All right, let's bring everybody back into the show here. We've got Jonathan, we've got Cindy, and we've got, of course, Gene, our great producer here. And we've had a really feisty discussion. This has been amazing, and I appreciate everybody doing this here. I just want to mention once again my idea, which we're probably not going to get to today, but we'll talk about sometime, is for the Jailhouse Rock Concert, a benefit for the January 6th political prisoners of the gulag in D.C., of the Marxist deep state that has imprisoned them simply for being inconvenient in their political beliefs. And so that I'm hoping to have happen. I'm already talking to some folks about that. And if we get a concert early next year, the Jailhouse Rock Concert, I think it's going to be an incredible event. Anyway, everybody's back. Cindy, Jonathan, Gene. Jonathan, let's go back to you. You had a teaser, you radio professional, about something you wanted to talk about now. So feel free. And of course, Cindy and Gene, always welcome to join the conversation. Anybody else? Pianki left us. Too bad. I'm sure he would have had a lot to add to this as well. Jonathan?
Well, and there's, of course, so much going on. But if I sound like I'm uncertain, it's because there's so many different ways one could go with everything happening these moments. But the thing
that's
is,
that's our lawyer talking.
Earlier this week, we saw a flood of lawsuits against the House Un-American Activities Committee, the select committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol. No assumptions there by calling an attack ahead of time. But the one of the reasons is that they've subpoenaed everybody. They're trying to say they need to talk to Mark Meadows, they need to talk to Steve Bannon, and if you dig a little bit, you find that they've already amassed enough information to keep them busy for the next decade. So they don't need any of this stuff, at least not urgently, if ever. But they also subpoenaed all of the telecommunications companies. For example, Zachary Real, who's a Proud Boy facing trial, they got a notice from Verizon that they were going to hand over all the information on his family.
Why are they doing
accounts,
that?
Why
are they doing that? They don't have any reason to hand
private
information like that.
Because,
gutless cowards.
That's a good question. We don't know. So the thing is that they're going to hand over the records of his 16-year-old daughter, for example. And
great.
The deadline was yesterday for Verizon to hand it over. So that's why there was a flurry of lawsuits to block it. And Ali Alexander, who I just met like a week ago, but he wanted to follow up and see if it helped. And he helped write it, and I was up most of the night, 2 nights ago, writing a lawsuit on that. And then he won a 2-day delay, so we're going to look it over again. But he's arguing, for example, that the time period is before the election and after January 6th, and so couldn't possibly be relevant. Now, he has testified in the January 6th hearing. He's given a lot of information, but he just thinks this is too far because it's outside of the scope, the time period, and he wants to kind of establish some things about that. There is a statute that applies. If anyone listening, some of it is a little hard to challenge with Congress, but this is something I came up with, is that Congress passed a statute limiting when a telecommunications company can give out information. So they're saying, well, we have inherent power to investigate and ask for all this information. I'm like, excuse me, you're the ones who passed the statute saying you can't. So, whatever power you might have in general, you took it away from yourself by passing this 2702 statute, 18 USC 2702, I believe it is, that says that they can't release this information except on certain circumstances that don't apply here. So sorry, guys. The But it is interesting because it goes into some of the compromises and clashes we've been talking about all morning. While we're on the break, Ali Alexander, no attorney-client privilege, just sent me an MSNBC article that Congressman Elaine Luria in Virginia, and she's Chief Jerome Bell is running against her.
He's been on the show too.
Virginia Beach area. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Jerome Bell's been on the show.
And
yep.
Right. And so he, so she just said that they are investigating crimes, and with Mark Meadows and everything, which shows a complete lack of understanding of the of the Constitution and what she's doing there. She's on the committee, and the investigations by Congress, the courts have discussed this and dealt with it because on the grounds that Congress needs to know what's going, it needs to know what it's doing, which it doesn't.
Well, that would help
In order to legislate. So there's this implied power. The courts say it's implied. It is not in the Constitution that the Congress needs to be able to inform itself to be able to legislate or decide whether or not to amend legislation. But it's not in the Constitution. But the problem is that over two centuries, the courts have been completely negligent in event, because remember, the Fourth Amendment says the people have a right to be secure in their persons, property, and papers.
Person, home, papers, and effects.
We have a
talk about it all the time.
What?
Yeah. Person,
we have
home,
a constitutional amendment to prevent this, and the courts don't. The court says, well, because Congress needs to have the right to decide for itself what it thinks it needs to know, we're not going to get involved, even when it's blatantly trampling on individual rights protected by the Constitution. It's like sometimes political gossip, but in doing this thing, trying to throw together this lawsuit and on short notice, I've realized things I never thought of before. Congress, it's good when Congress actually knows things instead of like legislating without knowing anything. But that's what
experts,
the Congressional Research Service is for.
Yeah,
that's what the Library of Congress is for. The Library of Congress exists for this very purpose, so they can walk across the street and pick up a book and inform themselves of things. And they have librarians there and stuff like that.
See, that's a huge
so
point.
On a voluntary basis, Congress can inform itself all it wants, and it can decide what it wants to know. But what we're talking about is something completely different. We're talking about a compulsory process. It's one thing for Congress to say, I think we'd like to know stuff. It's another thing to say that, therefore, they're going to send, jackbooted thugs in to break down your door and take your papers, computer stuff these days, because you didn't respond to their polite request. So, it's making me think of these things. It's very, very interesting compromises.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that you just raised a huge point with the Library of Congress. There wasn't one, member of Congress that went to the Library of Congress, or at least said so publicly, and said, I've been looking up, viruses, and here's what we've discovered. There wasn't one expert from the Library of Congress brought in. There wasn't any search done. There wasn't a panel of non-government experts. I mean, it would have been nice to see, Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Mikovits, Dr. McCullough, and Dr. Atlas, before Congress. And this is what I was calling for earlier, that they should have been testifying. This idea that experts only have to be government experts, and that you limit yourself to the government experts as your source of information, when the government experts have a vested interest and a conflict of interest, and they're completely compromised. So, in that respect, you can't believe anything that they say, really, when they're so compromised. Like the climate change people, they get grant money for saying the climate change is real. Fascist gets money for his patents and licenses on the products that he holds patents and licenses for. So he's going to say anything to advance his economic interests. So these compromised experts, but you got the Library of Congress, you know, you got the Congressional Research Service, and you've got all kinds of people that could have testified about alternatives to what was going on. But because they chose the one road, because they limited the liberties, because they channeled everything into, you know, vaccines for COVID, nothing else mattered. And that denial of information, that denial of options, that denial of other experts. And there is no scientific consensus. You know, people in science disagree all the time. Look at the flat earthers, you know, which is an easily proved experiment why the earth is round. Three cannons up a mountain proved it. You know, they fired the cannons when they couldn't see the sun anymore. Well, obviously the highest cannon saw it the longest, which means the earth is round. You draw a line. It's pretty easy to do. You know, and so this is how they proved the earth was round back in hundreds of years ago when they had cannons. You know, so the information's there. But it's a refusal to look at anything except, you know, the Health and Human Services people that they're you know, channeling as the only experts. So it's not a problem of experts; it's a problem of the only experts when there's so many people that could have testified with alternative points of view. And I think the Library of Congress would have been a perfect example. Not one search was done that I know of the Library of Congress on viruses or anything to do with this stuff. Perfectly good example, Jonathan.
Right, and any member of Congress, senator or congressman, can drop a letter in the inner office mail without even paying for a stamp, send it over to Congressional Research Service, and have them research anything. And it costs a member of Congress nothing.
Yep.
They can just say, hey, well, now it would help if, you know, there is a risk that if they don't word the question well, they'll get a biased answer. But if they say, you know, could you look into Dr. Fauci's successes, or could you give us details on the safety of hydroxychloroquine?
Yeah, or do what I did. You know, what kills viruses? I did one internet search. You know, this is what started this whole thing off in February. You know, 2020. I just put in the internet what kills viruses, and from then on, I mean, it's just three words open up this entire world. You know, to me, of virology that no one else, literally no one else, well, except for a few people, like we said before, but it didn't take a, you know, and I'm not a genius. I'm curious. I'm not the brightest guy on the planet by any stretch of the imagination, but I simply was curious enough to ask another question. What kills viruses? And that started an entire chain of alternatives to what was going on and led me the path that the show has taken for the last couple of years. Why couldn't someone else ask that in Congress? What kills viruses? You know who knows? Rand Paul knows. Senator Rand Paul knows. Some of the other doctors in Congress, they know. Why didn't they speak up? Rand Paul's speaking up now. Late to the party. You know, but a simple question.
Right,
what kills viruses? Would have changed everything.
You know, I wrote a book just summarizing what was in the news, what Trump did. And and the the famous bleach thing was, you know, listen to that press conference. Well, that's impressive. Remember, Donald Trump ignored COVID, and that's why he had daily briefings for several hours every single frickin' day.
Obama. You know, that was Obama's playbook. That was by design to put Fauci in charge of the Trump administration. That was all by design.
Right,
that was planned
Trump
out ahead of time.
Trump did not ignore. He spent every day. He focused the nation's attention every single day. I think even on Sundays on COVID-19.
Right. He never asked what killed the virus. But, he never asked what killed the virus.
No, it's true.
Never,
well,
not once.
He did. HHS did come forward. HHS scientists did come forward and give a presentation on some experiments they did, which showed that sunshine kills COVID.
Yep.
Now they said, well, maybe if, like, for example, you're on the jungle gym, the playground.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe underneath where there's no sunshine, but anything on top. Where the sun shines, it's gone in like 60 seconds.
Yeah.
It's dead. And then they also said that bleach kills it in a couple minutes.
Bleach kills
but
everything.
With manipulation, they call, you know, scrubbing, like within 30 seconds, it's dead. And isopropyl alcohol is even better than bleach, they said. These are the scientists giving the presentation. This is not Trump. And then Trump asked them, you know, what else are you looking into? Are you going to look into other ways to go about this? And then they said Trump, you know, they said Trump said to drink bleach. Well, if you listen to the press conference, of course, that's
no.
the daily briefing.
No.
That's not
we're
what he said.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
but what happened?
There's a little bit of that, but not.
Dr. Zelenko, though? Remember when Dr. Zelenko wrote the letter? In fact, I read the letter on the air. He wrote a letter to President Trump, and Trump actually was on hydroxychloroquine for a while. That's the time when he didn't have COVID. I think when he went off and he caught COVID. but that's another story too. But there was a chance. There was a brief shining moment of intellectual curiosity where there was an alternative point of view where Trump said hydroxychloroquine works, and then the deep state dissent, when they made it illegal and they demonized and they censored everybody, including me, you know, and a lot of folks, you know, but that for a brief moment, we could have gotten out of it. This was like May, June 2020. You know, and when he read the Zelenka letter and he talked about, and then it was amazing how fast, you know, Dr. Fascist and the big pharma, big tech crew completely, you know, demonized this. So that's why, you know, it was like, you know, point number, you know, whatever. The next point, that this was a whole hoax, that this was a whole propaganda effort. And again, the rights of, you know, the right to information. And I think that's a right. The right to you know, alternative points of view. You know, it's just as much a right. Free speech. It's part of, I would include that in free speech. Free information. This should be included in free speech. We may want to do some work on that. You know, the expression of alternative points of view. Yeah. But for a brief moment, we almost cured the pandemic, and then it got taken away from us.
But like I say, any member of Congress could have written a letter to the Congressional Research Service and say, "Tell us everything you know over the last 50 years from chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine."
Yep, sure could have.
You know,
failure.
And and like I said, it's free. You know, they don't even have to pay for the stamp to ask the CRS to do that. They do have to be careful, like I say, not to give an open-ended question so that they'll just get back the propaganda of the, you know, the conventional wisdom.
How did the debate get so challenged, so channeled into this vaccine only policy where nobody had any curiosity at all to look at anything different in an official capacity? The experts, the members of Congress, you know, anybody else in the health professions, anybody anywhere, there was no curiosity whatsoever except for Dr. Mikovits, Dr. McCullough, you know, Dr. Atlas, Dr. you know, the doctor, you know, Simone Gold, all these folks. Nobody was even curious at all. Let's get Josie on the conversation. She's calling us now too. Curious what she thinks, because she's been with us, you know, for years too. Josie, what would you like to add?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Hey, you guys need to see a video that Glenn Beck has. It's only a few minutes that somebody sent it.
Okay.
Glenn Beck has copies of 153 pages confidential agreement between Moderna and the U.S. government in 2015 that Trump didn't even exist in being a president then.
Mm-hmm.
So our government owns the vaccine, and that's why they're pushing it, you know.
Oh, and, yeah, the NIH is fighting with Moderna over the profits. That's one of the court cases we talked about, you know, a few weeks ago. You know, the government's fighting for why is the government fighting for profits of a private company's product?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously they're in on it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a conflict of interest, and that's another reason you can't trust them. Yeah, go ahead.
He was talking about Dr. Barrick and Chip or something like that.
Yeah.
Published their paper on the new Frankenstein coronavirus, and it is on page 104 of the 153 pages that Glenn Beck was showing. And the NIH and Moderna were collaborating with Dr. Barrick. His signature is on page 106. He was saying, so all this is well planned since 2015.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's since 2010. Moderna was chartered as a company. It's basically a government corporation. They weren't a pharmaceutical company. They're kind of a made-up company. They didn't even have pharmaceutical people. You know, they were basically licensing a product that hadn't been invented yet. See, Moderna invented the vaccine for the virus. Everybody, and we did this a year ago, March, 15, 16, 17, when we had three shows that covered how the vaccine was created first. It was Moderna started in 2010. Back in 2005, they knew the cures for the virus. Now, here's the thing, too. These people are so sinister. Dr. Fascist and all these crew, the reason that they picked a virus that could be killed by hydroxychloroquine and then ban hydroxychloroquine is so they'd have a cure. They always knew they had a cure because they're not stupid enough to create a virus that's going to kill them unless they know what the cure is.
Yeah.
Now, they'll ban the cure for everybody else, but they don't care because they want to make money selling vaccines. So they're cynical enough to sell vaccines, know what the cure is, ban the cure, knowing damn well in 2005 that hydroxychloroquine killed SARS-CoV-1, which is 72% of the genome of SARS-CoV-2. They knew this stuff. And that's now the documents are finally coming out, which is good. But they are as corrupt as, and Dr. Barrick, he's the one that took gain of function research, I believe, to the Wuhan lab. He was like the conduit. So Dr. Fascist, you know, to channel tax money to Barrick, who then gets it to the Wuhan lab to do the gain of function research mm-hmm. that Fauci says didn't happen, which we all know did happen. Mm-hmm. That's that mm-hmm. connection.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention, since I was outside the Capitol on the 6th, I know exactly mm-hmm. what happened.
Yeah, you and Jonathan.
This whole thing was well organized to put Joe Biden in the basement, you know, with the coronavirus and all that. This whole thing was a plan, completely mm-hmm. a plan to take over our government. And that's exactly what they did. And I feel sad for the 200 plus in prison. And without them going to court or do anything, you know, they just arrest and put them in jail instead of, you know, if you find a criminal, you try to trial the person until
yeah, due process.
You know, that he did it or not, you know.
Well,
and they still are reaching some of the people that went to the Capitol. They reached some of my friends that we went together. I'm waiting
for
them to reach to me. I can hardly wait. Oh, yeah. I wish they did.
Can you call us from jail?
I was going to call myself. No, I'm not going to go to jail. I know better.
I know. Yeah, I know better. I know.
Oh, yeah. I know how to defend myself. Yeah. But I can only wait for them to come knocking on my door. I wish they did. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's going
to
be really interesting.
Because I will videotape them, and I have a lot to say to them. Oh, yeah. They're all in it. They are the ones that need to be arrested. The FBI, CIA, everybody that organized this whole thing. They're mm-hmm. the ones that need to be in prison. And they will be. We will arrest all of them.
Which comes back to the basic point we've been making. You cannot give up your constitutional rights. Your constitutional rights are not subject to the public good. They're not subject to what's in the public interest. Your constitutional rights are what carry us through and stop these created emergencies by these manufactured experts to suppress our rights in our society and our country. But I got a new name for our content. I'm going to talk to Jesse about that. Okay, who's this? Is this Cindy or Jean?
Yeah, it's Cindy. I was just going to ask if Jonathan was still on because
he's still here.
I'm wanting to know why we're, 11, 12 months beyond January 6th and these people are still sitting in prison. How, because they haven't gotten their due process, how is that? And what's being done to change it?
Good question. Jonathan?
Well, the law does need to change, and of course, the people abusing the law need to change. This is unprecedented scope, so they keep delaying it and saying, you know, the judges keep kicking the Speedy Trial Act down the road, saying that this is so complicated and there's so much stuff and they're going through mountains of stuff. And so that's part of the delay, which is
unnecessary. Where's the bail?
Now, mind you, it,
where's the bail? Why aren't these people out on bail?
Well, and that's because the government is saying that they are in danger of doing again what they never did in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like Zachary Real, the way they describe him is he's like Napoleon Bonaparte on Elba Island. And we can't, you know, if we let him out, he's going to, you know, raise an army like Shay's Rebellion and, rampage across the land. And the evidence is clear, he never all he did the first time was just pack up his car and go to D.C. You know, so he prepared because every family who comes to D.C., you know, they make plans, they check on hotels, they pack their bags, they tell people where they're going and try to meet friends they have. But, you know, basically the approach of the government is that everybody, you know, all tourism to D.C. should stop because anyone who plans to come to D.C. as a tourist is a danger. But there are laws that there are certain laws that create a presumption against bail. And they're usually things like sabotaging a nuclear power plant or, you know, all kind of, and then they've got this thing about damaging federal property of $10,000 or more, which that makes no sense in that list. And it also makes sense that none of these defendants did it. But they're saying that, well, they aided and abetted somebody in damaging federal property. And we've asked, what's that? What property is damaged? So we don't have to tell.
Black Lives Matter are the one that did it.
Absolutely. And they were not, the courthouse in, what was it, Portland or Seattle is federal property. And they damaged it extensively.
And nothing happened to them. Nothing.
Right.
So the
Congress could change the law, like in the Republican wave, to say that first of all, you have to tell people what, because they're saying you aided and abetted somebody. Well, who? We're not going to tell you. How did you aid and abet them? Well, we don't have to tell you. And, so clearly you can't aid and abet somebody unknown. And so they're saying that even though for most of these people, it's explicitly clear that they did not damage any federal property and there shouldn't be any presumption against bail because of that. They're saying that, they aid and abetted some unidentified person in some unidentified way, like with the Oath Keepers. The Columbus store apparently was damaged before they arrived. So they couldn't have aided and abetted anybody because they weren't there, and they couldn't have done it because they weren't there. And yet they're still asserting this nonsense. And for example, Kenneth, the Oath Keepers, many of them from the Florida chapter, they're saying that they underwent paramilitary training. And we should probably go into, who's your gun per your Second Amendment person? We should talk about this because what they're saying is that they went for ordinary gun training, just, gun safety, gun use, before the election.
Hmm.
And they're alleging them of, preparing to attack the Capitol by undergoing paramilitary training. So what the government is saying is all gun classes are paramilitary training.
Yeah, we got about 10 seconds left. I gotta hold you up here.
Hey, Greg.
All right.
Hold on
just a second. That cancer that you want to create,
uh-huh.
I don't think we should have a cancer. I think all of us, America, should be walking over there in D.C. where those sinners are, and let's make a big deal about it.
That sounds good, too. I would do both. I want a concert because I want to use the culture against the leftists. We're
all
out
right.
of time. We're absolutely out of time. So, Jonathan, if you want to call tomorrow, Jim Dykes is the one you want to talk to. He's a director of Florida Carry, and he'd be the one to address that the best. He's a veteran. He's been a police officer, and he'd be the perfect person to talk to. We got a bunch of folks tomorrow.
Please.
Tomorrow's like Gun Day Fun Day. Yeah, go ahead. Real quick, because we're off the air, technically. Jonathan? Okay, good. All right. Wow, great discussion, everybody. Let's do it again tomorrow. We can meet back here next week, same time, 6 in the morning, Central Time, and go all the way through just like we did today. And thank you all. Thank you all for an incredible discussion, it's great to have folks disagree. I mean, it gives me a chance to sharpen my views on what I believe and what I think, too. So I always appreciate that. Gene, Josie, and Cindy, and Jonathan, and Dave, who called in earlier, great show today, everybody. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our new and improved bill writing website, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws.com. Back tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock Central Time.